February 5th, 2015, Portland District, Fitterwig. I started the recording.
Put that thing in my ear. I'm
not going to talk. Just need to be able to hear you.
I'm just a...
Okay, so let's go around the room and do introductions here. Let's start with the folks on the phone.
Hi, this is Natalie.
Hi, Natalie.
Morning.
Joe Skaliski, Fish and Wildlife.
Russ Kiefer, Idaho Fish and Game.
Morning.
Don Ward, Pacific State.
Hey, Don.
Hey, morning, John.
Bill Heblin, NOAA Fisheries.
Morning, Bill. Anyone else out there? Okay, I think that's it for those on the phone. Let's start and go around the room. Start with Gary.
Gary Fredericks, NOAA Fisheries.
Steve Schleicher, Hydraulics, Corps of Engineers.
Matt Cutts, I'm the Portland District Critical Infrastructure Program Manager, and I'm managing a couple projects.
Sean Tackley.
Gail Salonia, Project Manager, Corps of Engineers.
Seth Stevens, Hydraulic Engineer, Corps of Engineers.
Bob Cordy, Corps of Engineers, and now.
Tamiro Zindo, John Day.
Lisa Wright, Corps RCC.
Brad Effort, Corps. Andrew Derugan Bonbo.
Brian Bissell, Corps.
Eric Rovner, John Day Dam. Deb Bouse, Corps.
Scott Bett, BPA.
Julie
Turbia, BPA. Pat Dyke, Corps.
Major Shane, Corps.
Okay, I thought I heard somebody else call in. Anybody else on the phone there new?
That's Dave Benner, Fish Pad Center.
Okay, we have Tammy Mackey and John Rarsich here. And Ida Royer just walked in. So, we haven't had a Fitterwig meeting. We had a special Fitterwig meeting in October, and our last Fitterwig meeting was in August. And we had some action items from that meeting. The action items are on your agenda. They're also displayed here on the screen. Want me to go through these? Or?
Yeah, we can. Yeah.
First one is bond survival. Portland District, the action item was for Portland District to put together some meetings to focus on a path forward for Bonneville. And this meeting will likely be in March, April timeframe. Gary requested this be a COP discussion. And our status on this one is Fredericks asked about the schedule, and Sean and I deferred to Brad for this agenda item.
That was nice of you.
You're welcome. And so, yeah, I think we have this as an agenda item today.
Yes.
And so we'll be getting to that later in the schedule. Action item two, we talked about the Bonneville FGE alternatives at the last meeting. Fitterwig gave concurrence to move forward with further investigations into the alternatives, but they wanted the data and details to look at in more detail. And so at the October special Fitterwig meeting, there's a review of the 90% EDR supplement. We got comments back from agencies, responded to those, and everything is on a path forward there. You know, we're going to talk about FGE today, and specifically, you know, construction schedule and an update on where we're going this spring. AFF mods, following, you know, Fitterwig discussions and discussions at FPOM, our path forward here is to move forward with finalizing the AFF modifications, and we will not be installing the bypass pipes for this year. Lamprey minor mods, we'll be talking about that today. Including the Washington Shore LFS, and we had an action item for Brad to send an email with the information accessing the website for the JSATS information, and that's been completed. The Dalles AWS, I had an action item to send out the DDR to the group, and we completed that one as well. So, does anybody have any changes or additions to the agenda? Okay.
I'll bring it up later.
So, John, this isn't an agenda issue, but for the PMs or whoever is going to be doing a lot of talking, I think we'll ask that folks come over here, given we only have one phone, we don't have the little extensions, so pretty much where Matt's sitting or where I'm sitting, so that folks on the phone can hear you.
Sounds good. So,
the only other thing I'd bring up is, having talked about this in the Bonneville section, is the Mark Weiland's report, getting a final report on that.
Yeah.
I saw some email interchanges on that this morning, so I assumed you were going to talk about it. So.
Weiland update. Yeah. We'll add that, yes.
So I've got about 10 copies of his PDF PowerPoint. I have no idea which one.
Right now?
Sure. Well, you know, it's Mark is working on it, among a number of other things, and I think he told me last week when I asked him about it, you asked about it, Gary, that he was about a week away from sending it to his, you know, the polisher, and so hopefully it will be out very soon.
Okay.
As soon as we get it, we'll send it out.
So,
and we'll hound him.
Does he have a draft that he can get out?
Well, that's what he's sending. He's okay. He's got to go
that step first before he can get it to you.
Yeah.
And to us.
Yeah.
Okay.
We'll hound him.
Got some issues that are pending.
Okay.
Review of that.
Okay. We'll hound him.
Good. Thank you. I hate to say that.
No, it's needed.
No.
They've had personnel changes, as you know.
I know, Mark's pushed hard.
He's overwhelmed.
Okay. Our first agenda item for discussion is the Bonneville Spillway. This has been a concern, you know, for the Stilling Basin erosion issues and rock migration into the Stilling Basin. And we'll have an update on some longer-term efforts to look at Bonneville, you know, as a whole, and including the spillway. So let Matt Cutts lead off.
Okay, great. So we're going to brief on three things. And the first one is the rock removal project and subsequent repair. I was the PM on, and Lori Ebner is going to discuss efforts that we're taking to prevent migration of more rocks and more erosion in the Stilling Basin. So she'll talk about that in a minute, and then when she's done with that, I'll talk about the major rehab report that I'm PM for on the entire Bonneville project, and then I will also discuss where we are on the Bonneville Spillway Gate Repair and Storage Pits Improvement Project.
With regards to the Bonneville Spillway, we don't actually get to prevent rocks from moving. It's flow driven. What we do is we monitor the flow and how the spillway is operated, and we have triggers that if we've exceeded spill volumes, we go and we measure and we verify rocks have not moved into the spillway. What we do know is the repairs that were done have held. So we're not seeing either the concrete that was placed pluck out, and so in that regards, that's been good. We didn't hit the threshold cues this last couple of years. That's good. So with regards to the spillway, it's monitoring cues, and if we exceed certain volumes of spill, we go in and we survey again.
But since we haven't hit those, we haven't surveyed them. Okay.
No, I will let you know that there are rocks sitting off the edge. They're there. So the way the Bonneville Spillway is, it looks like road ramps, and they kind of are. In this case, they're rock ramps that rocks get onto, and we did try and flush them off, but we had a little issue. So we were not successful in that. So we are monitoring those, and I'm pushing for a survey this year, this next spill season year, even if we don't exceed the spill volumes, just because I want to know where those little rocks have walked to.
So you're talking about a survey in August or September, or September 16 or something like that?
Probably as soon after spill is done as possible.
Laura, you're saying rocks. What are we talking in terms of size? Just
They deal in sizes from, a lot of it is a little bigger than a softball, but they get as big as 3 or 4 feet. But I would say the average is 6-7 inches. They're big enough, they're a problem. Yeah, and we have lots of pictures. The problem is we've got 3,000 cubic yards of rock that are moving around downstream of the spillway. So we have a good rock source. And I believe it's been there forever. So, and we just kind of move it around, and then every once in a while the queue over the spillway is high enough, it gets onto those rock ramps.
And what's the magic queue
number? It's right around 300. Spill of 300.
Thanks, Lori.
Okay, brief on the other two projects that I'm involved with. The major rehab report, we are conducting a potential failure modes analysis next week on fish ladders and bridges at the project. We'll spend Monday at Bonneville and the rest of the week here, and we'll generate a report on that. There was a periodic assessment of the spillway and Navlocks in 2013, and we're using that and some other information to conduct another PFMA after we complete this PFMA next week that'll focus on Navlocks and the spillway, using that as a source document to pull in other information. And we're also going to consider other facilities at the project, but I understand you all are mostly interested in the spillway. So once we complete the PFMAs, then what we'll do is make a list of items that we think potentially need to be addressed in the shorter term, and we will push for a major maintenance report on those, on things that we think can go a little bit longer before causing major problems. We will proceed with the major rehab report. Major rehab reports just take a little bit longer than major maintenance reports. So that's where we are on the major rehab report. Spillway repair and go ahead.
What's the schedule?
Yeah, schedule.
So we should have a determination by this summer on what's going to be major maintenance and what's going to be major rehab, and then we start cranking on. Spillway gate repair and storage pit improvements. That project was potentially going to go out for AE design, but at this point has been pulled in-house. Our goal is to complete the design and get that out for advertising by the end of this fiscal year. We're requesting funding in FY16 for construction. We didn't get into the normal budget window, so we're just asking for out-of-cycle funding. If we don't get that funding in 16, I'm putting in a request for our FY17 budget submission for construction. We are just finishing up the 30% DDR now, and once we get further along in the design, I plan to be back to provide a more detailed brief on that project to this group. Okay? Any questions or?
I want to add two things.
Please do.
With regards to Bonneville Major Rehab, for those that have been around, we understand that there's a lot of work going on through the dam safety program, and we're utilizing the same type of tools. The dam safety program is concentrated on life loss. A major rehab is concentrated on the authorized purposes of the project. So it involves a lot more than loss of life, but we're using the same tools and methodologies. The other thing that's really critical in Bonneville is two, and I call them stakes in the ground, but what queue do you have to be able to pass through the project, and what seismic loading does the project have to withstand? Both of those aren't set in concrete. In fact, how we actually get them set in concrete is unclear, or a trial and error process. But it's really critical as to the recommendation for a major rehab is what queue does that spillway have to pass? So those are studies we're trying to get kicked off and moving now, but they will have a huge influence on the recommendations that come out of the team if, depending upon what the answer is. So, and I don't know which direction, I don't know what the answer will be that we get to go with. I have opinions, but it won't be me deciding, so my opinion doesn't count.
Well, it does.
We have one other stake in the ground, and that's survival, fish survival.
And that's actually an authorized purpose.
We're trying, the issue here is that we haven't proven up at Bonneville on formal standards. That's something that the clock is ticking on. And this project does, I think, tie into that. So we need to know, you know, what we're going to be doing, when we're going to be doing it, what effect that might have on survival of fish through the spillway, especially, which hasn't been that good. So some issues there that I think we need to think about. So they're tied together. This discussion we're going to have later about the performance standards attainment studies and any changes that need to be made to the project are tied to this, I think, directly. So, you know, knowing we need to know kind of when these things come out, I don't know what level of coordination is going to be included in this with fishery agencies. I didn't hear that today. So I would like to know what, as these milestones, as you come up with these different reports, are we involved in review of those, or are they going to be something that we will see? Will that be a subject of future fitter waves if we have future fitters? Those sort of things.
Okay, this is the first major rehab report that I've worked on. I'm not sure what level of outside agency review it gets, but I certainly will brief at future fitter waves once we're further.
Yeah, I think either that or we need to have separate discussions about, as you guys learn, you know, bits and pieces of what you're going to be doing in the future, or what the information that directs you to move to different directions, mm-hmm. I think is important.
Well, Mario, question. When would the major rehab occur? Would it probably be beyond this plan?
It's well beyond.
10, 15 years from now, maybe?
Which gets back to major maintenance issues versus major rehab issues and authorized purposes. It could be that, and I don't, well, we don't have the
it
answer.
It may be then that this has no bearing on it. You know,
right. On that buy-up, correct.
And that may be true. I don't know that yet.
Where I see a need for regional discussion and participation in the major rehab is in making sure that we account for the authorized purposes that we have today in an appropriate way, and that we're capturing those impacts in a way that we put things in the right place from a major rehab and a major maintenance. And so I believe there is a need to work with this group as we go through that. We're just not in a position to have a good dialogue yet.
At this point. Thank you.
Just so I'm clear, make sure I understood and I heard. Major maintenance would come first before any major rehab, correct?
That's correct.
That would be a decision made
this summer.
And then funding for that would be put into the 17 budget submission.
So funding for
items that need
17 or beyond. Yeah. It'll be well beyond 17.
But they'll be prioritized based on need, of course.
Yes, definitely.
Okay. Yeah, it may be that those maintenance items don't affect fish passage, and maybe we'll
Yeah. So at some point this summer, at a fitter wave, then we can brief on what those items are and then the region knows, are they fish related or not?
Right.
Yes.
Or you're thinking, or staring at the
eye. How far the guy?
I think. I think there is the potential, and the summertime is probably a good time to do that, that there may need to be a discussion as to what, specifically thinking of the spillway, what a maintenance track would be for the spillway to look at survival, and what we think would do the survival in the shorter term versus the longer term. And it all has to do with, like I said, that queue in the ground. If the queue is PMF, we don't have enough real estate at the property to get the PMF, so I don't quite know what the solution is. If it's a million, there's some things we can do with the existing footprint to make it work. If it's 1.6 million, we have problems. So that queue changes what major rehab looks like. But there's also the real authorized purposes, and are there things that we can be doing in a maintenance sense that gets us better authorized purposes right now? And I think the summertime will be a good time to dialogue that, because we may need to rethink some things.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you. Next up on the list are Lamprey Passage project updates.
I'm out. Thanks, everybody. See ya. So I can kind of kick this off.
Sure, go ahead.
So this is Sean Tackley. This next project, it looks like John's trying to bring up slides again. And can you bring up that update sheet? Because there's a couple of illustrations. So the minor fishway modifications for Lamprey project. I think most of the folks in the room are pretty familiar with this one, but the general purpose of this project is to tackle some of the low-hanging fruit, kind of small-scale, relatively low-cost, low-risk modifications in the fishways to make incremental improvements in Lamprey Passage. Projects completed to date was we installed a diffuser plating at the Dalles East Ladder and John A. South Ladders in recent years. This winter, the task was to tackle Washington Shore Ladder, where we had intended to install diffuser plating in the lower ladder. That kind of fell through due to some kind of schedule issues. And the plan is with the diffuser plating to award a contract this year and fill in any gaps if I'm missing something. But award a contract this year to get the plating fabricated so that we can install it when we can, which would probably be the in-water work period of 2016-17 when Washington Shore Ladder is scheduled to be out of service for maintenance. The other task this winter was entrance weir caps, rounded entrance weir caps, and I believe one of the action items from the last meeting was to follow up on a question about whether adding these kind of radius caps to the tops of the weirs would affect kind of the cross-sectional area and affect performance at low tailwater elevation. And the answer is, and I can kind of pass this around, I only printed out one copy, is that there's two leaves to those entrance weirs, and the lower leaf when fully lowered and the upper leaf when fully lowered. The lower leaf has a seal that sits at a higher elevation than the top of the upper leaf. And so if you, even with a crest on top, a rounded cap on top of the upper leaf, that seal actually still sits slightly higher than it. So we're not actually changing the elevation.
What was this?
Yeah, that's just kind of a general illustration of what these caps look like. And if you scroll down, so the Bonneville project folks.
Keep going.
Yeah, keep going. if you want to see what the actual looks like. Bonneville Project actually fabricated these for us, and they've installed two of these at the south upstream and south downstream entrances. And it sounds like, and maybe Ida can speak to this better, but it sounds like we're not going to be able to do the north upstream and north downstream entrance caps this winter. My understanding is the reason is kind of twofold. One is that the north side of the ladder wasn't dewatered, and so, you know, the weirs are actually sitting in water, and there's a bulkhead in place, right?
Yeah, and it's just too problematic to try and pull them on the water
now. And then there's a sinkhole issue, I guess, at Cascades Island, too, that's kind of diverting attention, so there just isn't the time to kind of try to figure out a way to get these out. So we'll have to get those installed probably in 16, 17. But they're pretty slick. They did a really good job on
them. Now we know where the spills could be.
Yeah, between them and granite.
So you'll see, again,
so
we've gone over this before.
Basically, but there is no impact on hydraulics.
It's minimal.
And is this, I mean, this when you're in low scale waters, when you have it down this low, when these are basically functioning? We have them both lowered all the way down to the lowest tail waters.
That was when the question would come in.
When everything's low, we drop all the layers to the bottom.
Right.
Bushes, yeah.
But this is the upper leaf.
Down the less than 10 foot, whatever, the tail waters.
Right.
So, Sean, the other question, the more kind of more programmatic one is, you guys put together a 10-year Lamprey plan. 8 years ago now or so. What's your plan for updating that to take what you guys have learned, what works, what doesn't work, and to update that and to project forward what your plans are?
Actually, we just completed that.
Excellent.
And Brian was involved in providing
Brian input. Is having to do one for us, so he's okay. Probably going to be cut and pasting quite heavily.
Gotcha. So yeah, we just finished that, and actually, if it hasn't gone, been distributed, I know it was distributed to the Fed caucus. I don't think it's been distributed to Federwake, but we can get that out at this level. But yeah, the tribal refs, so like Aaron Jackson, Bob Rose, Statler, and then Brian were involved in providing review. But it's a good question with respect to this particular project is, this year, we had quite a smaller budget than we've had in previous years, so we had to reduce scope of some of the labor for this project and others, and we're going to be reconvening the PDT pretty soon here to kind of look at what we said we thought we could accomplish in that 10-year plan update, and which is reflected in kind of what we have said to this group in previous updates, and kind of figure out what we think we can actually accomplish. The next ladder to tackle would be this coming winter at Bradford Island Ladder. So as we look into mods there, of course, we'll be working with everyone here to review the designs.
So, Gary, have you taken a look at that?
I looked at the 30% report you guys sent out the other day.
Yeah, for the LPS, bro.
Is that what you're talking about, or is that something else? That's something else.
Not the 10-year plan update,
no,
so yeah.
And I probably won't. It would be something I'd look at.
No, I'm just trying to think, is one aspect of library work is the monitoring for salmon, and that's not cheap. And that limits the amount of work we can do for library. So the question becomes, how much more monitoring can we do if some of these projects have been done for numerous times? Can we cut out the monitoring of that kind of stuff? And they're going to be the ones who are going to need to give us the okie dokie on that.
I got it.
And that's a good segue.
That's the reason I'm thinking, yeah, I'm not thinking today.
How are you? You're conservative.
Oh. I was at the emergency room until 11:30 last night with a bloody nose for my daughter, so I'm a little, I would be cranky here.
So Tom's.
It could happen. It might just like cranking up or crankiness. I mean, I got grunge girl over here, so, you know, I didn't know it was back in the 90s.
Did you get that in the notes, Tammy?
It's recorded. It's
a simple conversation.
For all to hear over and over and over again.
The gentleman from CritFic was asking questions about, you know, salmon monitoring for some of these modifications over the next few years. And it's a good question. In fact, Brad and I were talking about this morning as we project out the cost of adult salmon studies. One of the things that's listed as a potential item for Bradford Island and the same for Washington Shore, and we haven't started any design work, so I'm not saying we're going to do this, but okay. Was cutting the lamprey orifices similar to what Walla Walla's done. So the question will come up.
The report wasn't the whole thing. I thought that was it. No. I was like, well, listen, if we can get away with just this. I mean,
no, that was just the other
which was actually pretty extensive.
Yeah.
You're talking about more.
Yeah, so if we cut orifices in the serpentine weirs at Bonneville, the question is, based on what we saw at the fishways upriver, are we going to still plan on doing monitoring, or?
You can probably guarantee yes.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I was assuming, but I was just throwing that out there because we have to plan for that in our budget.
It's Bonneville.
A lot more ladders here than Mary. Mm-hmm. A lot more ladders here than Mary.
Well, we don't have to do every ladder, but certainly to look at the concept and understand what that impact is, I think. So I'm not saying that we just have to do things over and over again and be stupid, but at the same time, if it's different, if we have different groups of fish moving through, we probably shouldn't take a look at the effect.
We'll talk when we get there.
But I think that's what's going to happen here.
Those questions are going to start coming up pretty soon. So.
Well, the reason we're bringing them up now is in the out-year budgets, there was money budgeted for adult studies, and the question came yesterday, do we have studies planned?
Yep.
And this would be the only thing that I could think of that we might need it for. So
or this
we
type
get away
of thing.
From that, it's a similar mod.
You know, I don't know what it is at this point, so
great.
To say no is kind of stupid.
No, I'm agreeing.
And probably what we'll do is keep it as a placeholder.
And I'm not going to dig through hundreds of pages to figure out what it is either. So we're going to need to narrow this down to what we're planning.
I'm saying if we're doing the same structural mods that we did at McNary, at that point the question is, if we monitor the crap out of it at McNary, do we need to monitor again at Bonneville?
Yeah, there's density dependent issues, stocks difference. We'll look at that. We'll have to assess it. I'm not going to say no.
I know. I didn't expect it, but I wanted to put it out there that we're going to be looking for, like, not to keep spending much of lamprey money, which is dwindling fast, on monitoring if we don't think it needs to be done.
Right. No, that's an offer that.
Just put my stake in the ground. I'm taking the goat.
Put my stake in the ground.
I'm used to it. Here's where you pull out, though.
Sure.
Do you have anything to add to
that? No, you did a pretty good job. Wonderful job. Outstanding.
That's what I like to hear. That's in the notes, too.
Wonderful job.
Sean did an outstanding job.
He's a good star for the day.
Questions? Anyway, yeah, as we come up with designs and kind of narrow down what we think we're actually going to be doing, of course, we'll get engaged with the group.
Dino.
Oh, yes.
So the LPS project is looking at improvements mostly at Bonneville. One improvement in extending the LPS system at John Day North Ladder. But where we've got there is we've identified a bunch of improvements we can make to the existing systems at Bonneville, basically extending existing LPS systems, adding a couple new ones, and upgrading the current facilities. we got to a 30% design, or 30% DDR, I should say, and have developed some order of magnitude costs, and you know, we've got to start prioritizing. Our funding is pretty limited, and so I think we're at a point where we're going to meet with the tribes and the agencies and start, you know, prioritizing the improvements to get the most bang for our buck. Moving forward with those, the one piece that we are continuing to work on is fix for the air entrainment issue at the LFS at the Washington Shore Ladder. So,
so is that going to be done anytime soon?
The LFS?
The fix.
We're still developing alternatives. I think this year, you know, the construction would have to happen probably in October-ish, given the tailwater conditions. Potentially from a barge or, you know, depending on the concept we go with. Okay. But in order to, I mean, to get something designed and bid out this year is probably not too feasible. There may be some things that, some little things we could try with project support to try to, you know, to explore.
I'm trying to list down the roads and not have the same issues we've had.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's
for like a... Yeah, for a full meal deal fix, it's probably not going to happen this year. Steve, you want to talk about some of the options we're considering for the LFS?
Yeah, and before we jump into that, I'll just, you know, heading off the concern. So what we're doing is we're going to look at kind of a range of alternatives, everything from essentially just tweaking operations and spending essentially no funds on this, to kind of the full meal deal, like you said, of addressing the venting issues and whatnot. And so we'll develop kind of a decision matrix based on that, including all of the construction concerns from lessons learned last time and
cost.
There's
a major transfer
cost
going on that's going to take out half the plant for that extended period of 5 or 6 weeks.
Okay.
So depending on what units you need out, you may want to do it next year if you want the ones.
Oh, yeah. If we're doing anything substantial, I'd assume that it wouldn't be until this 16-17,
okay,
you know, ladder outage. But there may be smaller things that we can do, for, you know, that don't involve barge between now and then.
Sure.
So, did you want to discuss some of the?
Oh, some of the options.
Yeah, well, the basic description maybe of.
Yeah. Okay. We have like five options, and we have basically two issues. But you know, the one issue that's been discussed is too much air coming into the flume and then coming out into the entrance area. And then the other one is that we, upon further evaluation, we uncovered a possible lamprey passage problem in the flume, because we have two water systems conveying water. One is the lamprey flume, which the lamprey go up, and then we have the water supply system, which is a pipe running underneath it. And actually, I should probably pass a couple of these out here. Yes. Yes. Four more, so that's what
they
should
be. I've already contributed it.
Okay. What we find in certain tailwaters, lower tailwaters particularly, not only do we have more air in the system, but we also tend to get more water into the flume in a place where it's not submerged in the flume. So you got a backwater from the tailwater in the flume, which is not much above the tailwater, because with fish passage system, we don't want to create head loss. But the piping system that delivers that water undergoes a lot more head loss. Therefore, it's coming out at a higher level into the flume. And therefore, we have a section of the flume which is what we call supercritical flow, and it's a lot more than your standard LPS flow. And so Sean and Brent and Seth and I have been thinking of something that might go inside the flume that separates the flow that's coming from the LPS and the flow that's coming into the flume. And that way we'd basically have to have something that runs up the flume and
a divider
that separates the flume into two parts. Unfortunately, we don't have any graphics right now.
Yeah, still developing these concepts.
Still conceptual. But the concept seems to have some potential if we can provide a channel which basically just has the LPS flow, and the other part of the flow is feeding in where it gets to the submerged part, and then that adds to what's going down the main flume and then goes out the entrance and provides the attraction.
So you're thinking this is a spot where the fish may be failing. It may not be
could
going through
be.
Here. So
it could be a hydraulic barrier.
But it's certain tailwater conditions.
Yeah, it's between like 10 and 15 tailwater.
Yeah.
The high tailwater waters, we don't have. Our analysis says we don't have a problem. So some of the options, there are some options that might, it would require diamond work, and those are the ones that we have to decide whether we want to do them, you know, that they merit doing them,
right.
and that the cost is not going to be excessive and so forth, and not to mention all the coordination that has to happen. And one of those would be, if we could, if there was a design flaw in the flume, and the water supply boxes, or you have the pipes come up and feed these what we call water supply boxes, which are basically diffuser basins that feed into the flume, and they are partitioned going up the, you know, the flume, so that if all of that water could slide down and go to the bottom section of that, you know, if it was able to pass air up it and water down it, then most of that water would come into the lamprey flume where it's submerged. So that's one idea, is to actually cut out those partitions, but that would require diver work, and would also require a way to make sure that we get the coatings on so that we don't have a corrosion process down the road. So all of those are complications that would make that costly. Now we have other alternatives which are less intrusive, may not require diver involvement, and that would be like a manifold of vents running along the top. We can easily modify the covers of these water supply boxes. And that's one thing, that might be one thing we do in conjunction with the operational adjustment. Because we think that's fairly inexpensive and doesn't require divers if we do it at the right time of year.
Essentially burping the water supply boxes.
Yeah. Right.
When
did
the lamprey mainly pass
it once? June, July, August.
Yeah, summer.
So another solution might be instead of shutting it off at the end of August. Your tailwater drops below 14 at that time. Beyond your passage, you don't have to do all these elaborate fixes for the tail in the front.
Right. Yep.
Just operate once over 14.
Good point.
You still have the air problem.
But the different problem. But I mean, this is a whole different problem.
It's somewhat related, actually, to the.
Behind the air is worse at lower temperatures.
Right, but you can pick some point where you either just don't fix it, or you cut it off, or you modify it, know that you're only having to fix the problem down before.
Yep.
That may not be an elaborate fix. The rain makes it work.
Exactly.
That's true. Well, Steve. A little bit, I kind of got lost on the 30% trying to go through all that, but you were talking about some inserts with orifices, and there was some
that would go into the pipeline, the water supply pipeline, and Brent Welton has come up with a clever concept to make the orifice where it cuts off more of the flow on the top part of the pipe, so that, and then we'd place each one of these just downstream in the pipe of where the branches feed up into these.
The
sloping part of the flume and the water supply boxes, and then we can vent those with, you know, the manifold that I mentioned or something like that.
Contact with any of that.
No, it's all streaming
water.
It's
strictly passing the water. So we're trying to encourage the air to go up into the, you know, into the water supply boxes, and then we can vent them better. It'd be a combination of those two things.
There was some venting that I was looking at in there. I kind of figured out how that would work in high tail water. there'd be any chance for river water to pull in some of those areas, and I'm not fully understanding that.
Well, we run the vents up above the tip, the highest tip water.
Yeah. Which is like 30 feet, so, okay.
Right, yeah. Probably get it above 35.
Okay.
So I guess kind of the bottom line on these potential plume fixes is that, I mean, we literally just in the last couple of weeks started kind of fleshing out alternatives, and so schedule-wise, over the next few months, you know, this kind of decision matrix will start to take shape so we can make some prioritization decisions. Again, all of this is within the context of not just this project, but the overall Lamprey program and how much do we spend on addressing this. So, more to come.
Can you turn it off in September option?
Yeah, and there I want to have an alternative. It's not in here, but it's essentially just operational ideas.
Did we mention one of the operational options was to largely block off the upper entrance of the Lamprey?
Yeah.
That's one of the things. We could probably try that out this spring and see what comes of it. Do you want me to talk about the north downstream entrance?
Yeah, there was a task from the last meeting. Question came up about the just kind of the overall hydraulics of NDE of the north downstream entrance and kind of what this air plume looks like, and also the question of there's some recirculation that happens, a little bit of an eddy that extends towards the flume entrances, which could be one of the factors that's limiting attraction.
Yeah, I haven't heard anything so far that would change how we operated last year, which wasn't the best for that. So I'm wondering if there's any changes there. Further investigation could help us understand what the bubble flume looks like, just what you're talking about. It seems like that hasn't, we haven't really got into that.
No, we haven't made any changes. So
detail,
if we change anything this year, it'd be operational. So the fish field unit is going to be actually operating the system. So,
okay.
You know, and we'd be just evaluating based on, you know, how many fish we catch in the trap. Because again, we don't have any research dollars this year. So if we were making changes, it would be something like shutting off or mostly shutting off that upper entrance.
Yeah, that's totally shutting it off.
Part of it, though, was understanding the bubble curtain and how that looked. That's the hydraulic side of it.
And I don't have the, I mean, I think...
It's a risk assessment issue. You know?
Yeah.
We're kind of risk-averse saying, okay,
right.
You know, you're limited to 20% or whatever. You might know really what we're looking at.
Right. And U of I is still kind of working on their analysis, so I don't... I mean, I think they had some preliminary results at AFAP, but...
They're hoping to get some
right, they did.
Information, and that might help us with... Where the bubbles are coming out.
Right.
Okay. So down the road here between now and fish passage season,
yeah.
We want to have some maybe an ad hoc discussion about this.
Yeah, I'll work with Nathan and U of I. And
come up with some
Steve.
Limitation that we can live with for operation next year. That'd be different.
That's better. That's why we're going to have this information. You'll see if we have to restrict this for last year.
So. Look forward to another meeting sometime in the future. You got that 30% of discussion of DDR coming up.
I did. Yeah, so it's kind of the final point I wanted to make is that Seth had touched on this notion, and I think I said this in the letter when I distributed the 30% report, but you know, we're obviously funding limited in this program and with this project, so we're not going to be, even if we everyone bought into all the concepts in the 30% report, we wouldn't be able to afford to do everything. So we want to have a special fitter wig sometime in March or April. I wanted to make sure we did it when Chris Caudill was back. I don't know if folks heard, he had heart surgery recently, so he won't be back in commission until March. But wanted to have a special meeting to just talk about all the potential alternatives and to get some buy-in as a group on what the priorities should be based on the kind of synthesis report that U of I did previously regarding where the bottlenecks are, and if you improve passage by X percent in this reach, you know, what we think we could do in terms of improving all, overall dam passage efficiency at Bonneville. So be looking for a doodle poll on that, but if anyone has any particular ideas, March, April, of a good time or a bad time, let me know. But that'd also be a good time to revisit maybe some of the flume questions.
Yeah. First meeting in March. I like that. March 5th. There's an early term.
March is better?
Yeah.
Okay.
Just not the flume.
Folks on the phone, catch that?
Yeah, I think so. Special meeting in March.
Yeah, and probably not the third week, because Gary's...
There's an erdic trip.
Oh, okay. Yeah, there's an erdic trip. Okay.
So yeah, as long as that date isn't too late to make any of these minor modifications.
Yeah, no, this is just the LPS kind of prioritization discussion. And then the team would take the results of that essentially and move on to the 60% level, right? So we'd shelve whatever we're not planning to do.
Yeah, that sounds fine.
All right. I'll put together a doodle poll. Anything else?
I don't think we can do a poll.
I don't know what you're saying.
I guess NWP can still doodle, so do it away.
Just put on a flash.
I can doodle if I want to. You'll get it from my personal email address.
So do you want to doodle for you? Great. We'll doodle it for you.
Yeah. Have Brian do it.
Yeah, I'll process it for you.
March 26th is a good date. There's no other meeting scheduled.
What is that, Saturday?
Saturday, March 26th.
Yeah.
Thursday.
Yeah, I won't be here.
Okay. Will your Lamprey guy, Trevor, be there?
On 26? I can try.
All right. All right, thank you, folks.
Thank you, guys. The next item on the agenda is the Dalles East, the Goldfish Ladder HPS backup system. And just quickly, where we're at, we had a 60% review for plans and specs. I sent out that package to folks to review. We got comments back. We're moving on to the 90% review, and we have an internal review that's just begun. And I'm going to be sending out the 90% plans and specs to fish managers here very soon, within the next couple of days. So. It's over to Pat Dyke here. And
sure. I put together just a few slides based on some of the 90%, just to give everybody here a little bit of a perspective of what's in the package and to kind of walk through the project. And there's probably, towards the end, I got a slide on the schedule, and probably we're just going to need to start the discussions about maybe the potential to start that second in-water work season a little bit early. And to start the boring, we'll likely need to start that a little bit early too. I think we're okay doing it at night to further minimize the impacts. We're still working that schedule. The schedule that was laid out, I had a lot of issues with, and we need to rework some things, so I don't have a firm date of when we would need to start. I just want everybody to start thinking about what concerns they have as we start some of these activities. So I'll go ahead and walk through. Obviously, the North Ladder just shows the overall project in both the photo and then the plan. That's where we're working to add the auxiliary water supply. So here's the isometric view. If you can see the intake structure, the pipe that we'll be installing is the 10-foot diameter pipe. It'll bifurcate into 2 7-foot diameter pipes before it goes into the actual AWS chamber to feed the ladder system. One of the big changes from what was in the DDR to what we have now is really some work on the upstream side. Previous DDR had just some little stem walls that would hold the trash rack. We're beefing that up, and we're going to actually use the trash rack slot as the dewatering cofferdam initially. And then once we're done dewatering, we'll take that out and we'll store it so we can use it in the future as well. And then we'll drop the trash rack slots into place. There will be an operating gate right up on the dam face. And in this just downstream of the downstream side of the dam, there will be a butterfly valve. And then there's also two butterfly valves on each of the 7-foot diameter pipes. That's to help with flow initiation as we water this thing up, not to create water hammering kind of activities. So go ahead and go to the next slide. I really like this photo. This is just a cloud plot of our telemetry data to kind of show the upstream phase. It's kind of hard to see, but way up here at the top there, it's where the ladder exit is. And we're going to be somewhere right around in here with the bore penetration as it goes through. Really what this, the benefit of this slide for the design team was, there's really not a lot of large rock, woody debris in front of this place. We did just do some soil grabs where we took a little clam bucket and pulled up a couple samples. It's really sandy material, so it's not real fine. It's not going to create a lot of cloud. We did see some mussel shells in there and stuff. But anyways, the good news is it's readily removable. We think it's about 3 feet thick based on as-built drawings to what we're seeing in the thing. That's probably plus or minus a foot. But I think as far as removing the sediment off of that to get to bedrock, it is going to be pretty minimal. And you can kind of see it's really clear. It's a great shot. So go forward here. The next one is really just an isometric view of the actual intake structure. You can see on the very bottom we have a trimmy slab. So once we excavate that soil off there, we'll put a trimmy slab down. We're going to do that in the first in-water work season. And then the towers coming up off of that, which will be the ultimate guide slots. Those will be precast blocks that we will fab during the off-season. And in the second in-water work, we will come and install those. Again, you can kind of see where the trash, where the bar screens will be. And then there will be a gate right up against the dam face that will be deployed. That's not an operating gate. We'll rely on the butterfly valve to provide the operation. This is just to secondary closure. And also, if we need to dewater and inspect that pipe, we would close that gate, dewater it, and move forward. But most of the time, I suspect that gate will be probably propped up in an up position, and we'll rely on the butterfly valves to retain cool. So that's kind of the upstream. Any questions on what you're seeing here before I move on? Because, I mean, this was probably really the biggest change. Walla Walla's design, they helped us with the DDR. They had a cofferdam system, which was all steel, half round. It would have needed to come out quite a bit of distance and be dewatering a larger area. And the uplift forces on that were just problematic. This system allows us to dewater, but also retain that dewatering structure for the future, which is a great benefit. That half-round system was probably a $3 million temporary structure that just went away.
Yeah. What part of this was you take out of store?
What was
it? You mentioned taking some of this out and storing it.
The cofferdam.
Yeah,
so the major dam, or the bulkhead, if you will.
Just the bulkhead, basically.
That goes out front. We would take that and probably put it over there by the Navlock or some other place that the project would like. Then we drop the bar screen right in that same slot.
Yeah. Same slot.
Yeah.
Could you clarify the dates of the first? I thought I heard first in water work period. What
I have a slide on the backside, so okay. I should get there, and if not, please bring it up again. Okay. Any other questions about what you kind of see on this isometric view here on the upstream side?
Yeah, how deep is that?
I want to say the bore is about 60 feet depth of water. The actual bottom of the slab is probably about 80 by the time you get there, but the center line of the bore is about 60-ish. Go ahead, Jim.
Can you see that?
So here's the bore through the dam, and really, you can kind of see the depths here a little bit better. I think when you actually see the plans, you'll be able to read the numbers. I can't read them from here. But you can see the two slots, the trash rack slot and the gate slot. You can see the bore through the dam. You can see the concrete mass on the back. That's just the thrust block to provide a resisting force during operation. And you can see the 10-foot diameter butterfly valve. But really, I think you can see the relationship of the fish ladder right above this pipe. It goes right overhead. It's probably 25 feet-ish. And we will need we'll try to probably prep this and get it square and flat in the first in water work season to be ready for that second one. And as I said, we're trying to figure out when's the latest or earliest we need to start that bore.
Depends on the noise issues and stuff associated with it. Hammering out and doing the letter jackhammering and stuff early.
Yeah, that's why we want to do that square that up in the first season.
We'll talk about it.
And then boring, we'll definitely do our homework and try to push that as late into probably, my hope is to get it into November and do it during nights to avoid those impacts. But that's what we kind of need to start thinking about as a group collectively, what our concerns there are, and we'll refine our schedules and hopefully come to with a request that we can then.
You're thinking a couple weeks probably.
If I had to guess right now, November 1 maybe, okay. Or first part of November, is when we might need to start boring. But yeah.
It's a month, right?
Yes, it would be a month. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a month, really.
Some people have concern about the proximity of the air gallery or the gallery down there in the dam, but I think this is, again, roughly 10 or 12 feet. And when we did Dorina bore, at Dorina, same size bore, we were within 3 feet of the gallery, and we had no cracking, no vibration, no issues. So this 10 foot, I'm perfectly comfortable with. Any questions? I mean, you can see the fish ladder. That's really my main concern, and I think everyone else's concern is as we start to do work and heavy work in those areas. But we're going to make that as tight as we can.
And then you're going to line that and grout the pipe then?
Yeah, it'll be overboard. I think it's about 11-foot diameter hole, 10-foot pipe, and then it's grouted back in place. Go ahead, John, moving forward here. I was hoping to get you a better isometric view of the actual intake into the AWS chamber itself, but I just couldn't track somebody down yesterday to give me a better cut of. But you can kind of see the isometric of the actual pipe structure. I think the DDR had a third layer of holes that we've now moved, and I think it's extended the T out a little bit to get those extra holes there. Yeah, so I was trying to get the actual cut in the AWS chamber with the water profile so we could see it, and I will try to provide that.
Dr. Ryan.
It's below, those top pipes are below the minimum hydraulic grade lines we have.
All below. So if you guys are wanting, we can take a different isometric view of the chamber, and I can send that out to John if we need to.
That would be 90%.
This is in the 90%.
That is.
Well, I was trying to get you something else.
If I were you, one of these fancy interactive.
I mean, this is in the three-dimensional model. I just need them
spin it.
They just need to take a different cut. But anyway, so Steve confirmed that for me, so thank you, Steve, that those are below the minimum. And that was the large concerns. And I think the next slide has the schedule that we'll talk through. So we're at the 90% right now. We are going to push really hard to get to 100% by March. There's still quite a bit of work to do to get through the package for the 100%. Really, all of we got a lot of kind of resourcing issues in our contracting section, so I'm trying to provide them as much time as possible to get through the contracting side so we can make this award date of somewhere mid to early August if we can. And that's really to allow the notice to proceed and allow enough planning to actually make that first in-water work season effective. And there's definitely the soil removal and the trimmy slab is probably by far the most critical piece to get in that first season. But we'll also be looking to do the actual work in the AWS chamber and bring that pipe up into the parking lot in that first in-water work season so that really in the next season all we're doing is pushing the bore through and then regrouting that pipe back to where we left off.
So the second season would be the coffer.
So if you can you back me up real quick, John, to the cross section?
Right here.
So this would be the next season that slab, and then we would do that AWS chamber work. And my hope is that we would, there's a couple hundred feet through the parking lot, and we would bring it up just shy of where all this work is going, still allowing project access through that lower section. And then in that second in-water work, we would punch through and then regrout and then bring the pipe back to wherever we stopped. That'd be that second in-water work season. The bore would be starting while we're setting these precast blocks. Yeah, so there's lower dam side work versus upstream side work.
Get the coffer and then you can punch the hole.
Yep, so we could get all the way up to about 15 feet, but then we would need this to be fully dewatered, and then we could make that final push, and then in attempts to get both this valve installed and the upstream gate installed so we have that layers of redundancy of protection.
Okay, are you going to move up towards that valve the first year then? Is that what your thought is?
Yeah, so after the first in-water work, hopefully we're 50 feet or 100 feet away from the ladder, and we would agree just progressing up to a point that made sense to stop before. And there may be a little bit of lag between when we'd be on site heavily versus gearing up for that first or that second in-water work to punch through. Hopefully we would already have this prep first in-water work window so that when we got ready to go, we're ready to go. The benefit of doing all of the bore through the second season is fabricating the pipes and getting them all fabbed up and tested. Obviously, we couldn't do the first season. So
what I saw made of?
What's that?
What are the pipes made of?
Steel. Yeah, and they
penstock.
Yeah, it's penstock, and they go through a pretty rigorous. They got to be pressure tested and radiographed.
And you
come
and galvanize
the new site? Not galvanized. Like this
final paint.
See if they're awake.
They'll eventually rust through.
Go back to the schedule just so we get there now. Anyway, so I put it in a note. I think October is probably too soon. My hope is to get it into November and really work that schedule.
So now you're thinking both of those in water work periods are you going to be November, the month of November? Because that's talking about the hole, so that's the second one.
I think it's on the second one. I don't think
not
we're
so
on
much
the
first, first one.
No, because there's, okay. By getting a contract issued in August and getting the planning,
it's coming up.
They won't have enough time to really get ready, I think.
Okay.
And
so
I think
one.
Enough to get that slab and a few of the prep work and the AWS channel work is if we can get that done in that first season, I think we've done pretty well.
Which month are we going to pour the slab?
January. They're not going to do it in December.
That's one that's most full sensitive.
I think as we place it and as that kind of sets, we would try to reduce flow for that 6-hour window or whatever we could manage temporarily. Makes good sense. And there might be some form work where they might need a little help with flow, but good point, Scott, because I did gloss over that. We did do some data back in
October, November, and we have another one scheduled for April. The November tests showed that we're less than a foot for most of our construction. As you get away from the dam structure about 20, 30 feet out, you do see an increase in flow as it sweeps across. It does get up to one and a half probably. But we're hopefully closer, and especially with our precast system, I think a lot of the work is going to be right at the dam and the structure interface. And we'll see what our test in April, but it's the Lori Ebner scheduled it so that we would take some the before spill and then some right after spill to see what influences in the work area we have. It's also probably a higher flow period than what we had in November, but it might not be much higher given the year we're having.
Probably the peak for the year.
But I think we also have some meetings with our diet safety team next week. But I haven't seen anything that causes me a lot of alarm that this isn't diver safety or isn't in the realm of possibility with not impacting RCC or BPA's missions adversely. We'd be looking for small temporary windows at best. So. Anyways, the DDR estimate came in about $13 million. I had a little bit of contingency. I am hoping to bring that down. I think I don't necessarily want to float a number, but I think it's less. I don't want to be held to it, but I do believe we'll be within
or under plus or minus 10-15% range.
I would say 10 or 11 right now.
And the world.
One. I need a range still.
There's that John Day pit.
There you go. I was going to say, do you care where the Gary Fitter's clock's going to go on this thing?
I was going to ask where Gary's retirement date was on the schedule.
Looks like December 16th. Yeah,
like 16.
I was thinking about that.
Well, like 2 years. Yeah, 2 more years. How much lead time do you
have? You can bring the champagne on the hall.
Start June, no problem.
Could it be when they started, Gary, or does it have to be when they finish?
Yes.
Contract. I was going to say, breaking ground.
And could we expedite?
Just depends on where
we're going. Could we start tomorrow?
There you go.
We'll embed it in that first precast slab or that treamy slab on
the bottom of the
wall.
Yeah. That's appropriate.
You're going to know.
Chris down there stuck it in.
Anyway, any questions? That's what I prepared. Hopefully you guys get a chance to look through the package, and we're happy to take any and all comments.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
You were done.
All right. Thank you.
So the next item on the agenda was an FPALM issue, and Gary asked that it was added to this Fitterwig agenda, and it was regarding the North Ladder engineering evaluation at the Dalles. The PUD submitted a study design to look at a proposed additional unit at the North Ladder of the Dalles, and the plan was to submit that to SRWG. Prior to submitting that to SRWG, the Corps and the BPA are going to review it and likely provide comments to the Dalles PUD. But Gary, you want to take this one since this was your request?
I think I have the answer. I mean, not yet, but what I heard was that the PUD was going to do the geotech evaluation of the emergency AWS channel, which was all concerned about. If all those who were around in the early 90s in this forum remember that we...
I think that's just you.
I was close, but I was in the early 90s. Remember that we rock, bolted, shock created, did our best to...
stabilize.
To prevent that system from falling apart if it was ever used. But that was a long time ago, and I'm not sure what condition all that stuff is in. I do know that that channel was in pretty poor condition back then. The rock bolts and stuff were just sort of stopgap at best to hold it together. So I'm a little worried about somebody using this thing for several months at a time for a test that then could endanger our ability to use it if we needed it in an emergency.
So that's my concern. Now, I heard that Wasco County is going to go in and do an evaluation of this. I'm a little worried about that. I want to make sure the Corps is on top of that as well. Now, I heard that the Corps was not going to do their own evaluation, but would rely on Wasco County. So I'm not sure what level of oversight there will be from the Corps of Engineers in that evaluation, but I think there needs to be some.
There will be some. We're going to, PUD is going to go in with their team of geotechs, and if they come back and say there's absolutely no threat, then we're okay. We'll have our folks review it, and then we'll give it the thumbs up. If there's any question at all, whether or not, if they come back and say, well,
if they say there's no threat,
might last,
I think there's a question.
then we'll bring our geotech in and basically evaluate it with our own.
Given what we know about it, if they come out and say,
thumbs up, no
thumbs
problem.
Up, no
say,
problem.
Hey.
Wait a minute.
That's what I was saying.
Gary,
kind of really close.
Well, to answer your question, it has been operated. I mean, it's operated pretty much every year, but very short.
Short periods.
Like a day at the most.
Yeah, what they're asking for is to start operation in the spring, and run it all the way through September, October timeframe. So that's a lot of long periods. And I don't want to shorten the life of that thing any more than we have to. So that's my concern. That I've told them that their study is contingent on no effect of that channel. Anyway, so you guys,
that was our plan, but we can definitely change that and have a geotech come out and do it, provided we can find some funding.
Who's going to review it? The people
our structural
need to review
engineer.
Who?
The project structural engineer.
Okay.
He is involved with it right now.
Well, if you guys sign off on it,
yeah.
And just remember you're signing off on this thing that there's not going to be an effect from that study. That's what I'm saying. Okay.
Are we good?
Have you seen their proposal study?
Yes.
Has it changed since? I mean, it was a couple months ago when we saw it.
Oh well, I haven't.
And there were we had some methodology issues with it. Have those
so
did
I.
Or?
I haven't seen it in months.
Okay. If you get it, you might send out the rest of us.
That was our plan. Is to.
You can't review it first.
But I asked them to do.
Okay.
I asked them to have SRWG review.
And we will. I don't think that's happened.
I don't think that has happened.
We're going to review it first as the action agencies and see if we want to proceed.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah.
So we're going to try to kill it before you use it.
Okay,
it's
shut up.
They've asked, I think, through John, they've asked that the Corps send it out to the SRWG. And I don't want the perception that the Corps is endorsing this until we've had a chance to review it, because I think what most of us, or at least the folks I've talked to, the concern is just looking at window counts isn't really providing a lot of benefit or solving a problem. It's really in efficiency, either increasing ladder entrance efficiency or passage efficiency. And until we get that, then that's really the benefit that we're looking for. Just move, increasing the numbers. I mean, I don't know what that. What
that would be a benefit. I mean, just redistribution is a benefit, I think. But efficiency would be, a better way of evaluating that. It's just that as soon as you go into that, you're asking for an RT type study rather than a count type study, which I think puts it out of their budget. So smooth move, Scott.
Well played.
Well, I mean, if the Corps was doing it, that's probably what we would be looking for.
Yes.
Right.
So.
Well, I mean, you got to be careful a little bit here. I mean, they're the ones that are proposing it, so you're looking at the merits of their study design, not so much the Corps study design.
No, that's right, but Pat is correct. If this was something that we were proposing to do, we would go out and do
I agree with that.
A study design that was going to answer the question appropriately.
But you're not. They are. So, they're not trying to defend them any, but just the fact that they're, what I said is they needed to at least have somebody review that from our perspective. I'd like to see SRWG look at it. It's still their study design. Your comments are appropriate, and they should be put in there
and
on top of that. But to say, no, you can't do it because of this,
And if they want to move forward, I mean, obviously there's the flow issue that needs to be resolved.
You guys got to run the valves.
But,
sure,
but
you're damn.
You know, to me, I'm trying to influence or help them understand what kind of lift would be a positive lift to force an operational change.
Right.
And I'm not sure just pure slight redistribution and having a few more fish to use.
Exactly. I think it's going to be.
If you can measure.
If you can measure. Hope springs eternal.
But that's been their hypothesis, and that there isn't there's no detriment to doing it.
I think they're looking.
And so if they go in with a study design, it's not going to have a good likelihood of being able to even tell the difference. Then we have to consider that.
That's a little difficult for RT studies, for adult studies. It has been for 20 years. No statistical difference.
And that's fine if we do a proper study and find no difference. I mean, that's a good result. But if we go into it based on our counsel, we don't think that's going to there's going to be a lot of power in order to tell if there really is a true difference. Then we have to, that's just have to be a consideration.
It's a pretty simple design. Window counts, two treatments, student's t-test. Is there a difference? It's pretty simple.
Okay, moving on. John Day North Ladder EWS pumps. At the January FPALM, Miro reported that there was some extensive testing done in December and it should address some of the issues with the pumps. And this issue is receiving a lot of attention. It's in the hands of NWP. And it was also reported that 5 out of the 6 pumps are available. Natalie, are you on the phone?
Yep, I'm right here.
Okay, ready for you.
Yeah, so we're still doing the redesign on pump number 4, which is down. We actually have 4 pumps running. We're also trying to deal with a vibration issue that's occurring out at the dam. So it's, just kind of a major work in progress still. Any questions?
Lots. So when is the testing going to be completed?
So, I'm not clear what you mean by testing.
Well,
so, we're actually redesigning.
So, you're redesigning.
So, pump 4 is down, and so we've provided a cure notice to the contractor that they have to get that pump up and running. They have to, so they're redoing the whole design on it. And that, we won't have that 50% or 60% until April.
So are you going to have to do a redesign on the other 5 as
right.
well?
It could affect the other 5 as well. Correct. We don't know that yet.
What's sure. going to lead you to make that determination?
Vibration?
Well, it depends on what they're going to come up with for 4.
What about the other pumps? Is there an issue with the other pumps that would lead you to believe that the design flaw was common across all pumps that would need to be fixed?
Well, I don't think we can answer that yet. I mean, our failure analysis provided that there were some design issues, but we don't know if all pumps are affected by those design issues, meaning, so, like, for example, if one pump is perfectly aligned and the other ones were just slightly off, then one of the pumps might be just fine. But we don't know that detail right now.
So if our understanding is correct, when they come misaligned, that's when the problem occurs. Won't pumps over time slightly become misaligned just because there's wearing issues with pumps, and so isn't this going to be kind of a long-term issue?
No, they shouldn't be. They shouldn't misalign at all.
Unless they settle.
And they're bolted in place to stay in place and run in place they don't. Over time, get worse.
Work on the sewer, the next thing you know, the whole thing cracks and slides off. Okay.
So,
So what I'm hearing then is this is a follow-on CRFM-funded project for who knows how long.
Well, no, not necessarily. So we've provided the cure notice to the contractor that said you did not provide us six pumps, reliable pumps. So I think it's going to become a legal issue.
Okay, so you've
been briefing the attorney here. We meet, you know, once a month or so and hash out where we are, where we're headed. I've been doing everything I can to protect the core on this.
Yeah, that was nice.
So you'll just have to stay tuned because that's all I can tell you right now.
The main concern is that the project doesn't end up coning those pumps in the condition that they're in.
Coning? I don't know what you mean by coning.
Owning. Buying.
Oh, no.
They'll be there.
Yeah, that's why we have a cure notice out.
We're O&M responsibility with no money fix and no manual for delivery.
Well, they already are doing O&M, because the pumps are running. So we want them to do O&M, or otherwise then the government will be basically told that we weren't following the O&M manuals, therefore we are responsible. So
I'm talking about the original design and what you guys signed off on after you paid for these pumps to work as they were supposed to.
Well, I don't know that we've officially signed off on them, Gary.
I know, that's what
and
I
that, that's what we're what, that's making good sure that you have done. As soon as you take full ownership of them, they become O&M's responsibility, and we want to make sure that whenever O&M takes full responsibility of them, that they're not going to have long-term issues that O&M has no funds for.
They lead back to the original design of the pump.
Right.
Well, and that's our hope, too. I mean, we don't want that either, guys. That's why we're trying to make sure it gets done right by them. With them not having the right design.
Yeah, I'm just trying to figure out like a timeline of when we're going to get some sort of.
Well, we've mandated that they have them all up and running by 2016 to their new whatever occurs. So they can't get it done in this season if the design isn't done until April. There's no way we could meet June for four. So that 16 is. 16, I think, is going to be our latest date, September of 16.
September of 16.
Well, that's in order to get the contract all done. So, you know, I don't know exactly. I don't have a firm schedule at this point. They just, anyway, and when I do get a firm schedule, I can pass it on, but I just don't have one right now.
Okay. And then I guess the other question is, have you guys got more of a beefed up monitoring schedule, or monitoring of the pumps to see if they start showing signs of problems?
Beefed up Montre. I don't know what you mean by that.
Beefed up monitoring.
Oh, monitoring. So I think it's, you know, John Day's been doing a really good job of communicating back to everybody when there are concerns. So it seems to, I mean, Miro would know best because he's out there in the field. Miro, do you have any comment on that?
No. All I hear at this point is we have sufficient number of pumps, which we do.
Right.
You guys are making me feel so good.
Somehow that didn't make me feel good.
Ooh, I feel much more comfortable now.
But next
yeah, I'm sorry, guys. I wish I could make you more comfortable, but I'm not even comfortable, so.
Right.
Yeah, there's not much more I can do, but
you gotta
keep the pressure on them.
You got to get them done so they're right.
They're working it.
Yeah.
And we're working it pretty hard.
Okay.
Briefing corporate board and everybody else, so it's, yeah. Anything else, guys?
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Have a good day.
Thanks.
I'm going to go now.
The next item on the list is the B2 fishing at Trash Rake at the January 8th FPALM. Ben reported that the perf plate was the only thing that needed to be installed, and it would be back by March 1. Since FPALM, we've been talking with the project, and they have a very demanding winter work schedule.
How much has it slipped?
Well, it hasn't yet, but you know that Eric Strickland is working with the project currently to see how we can meet that deadline of March 1. Mm-hmm. And following that would be...
Are you putting a beer on it?
What's that?
Are we betting a beer on this? It's going to be done March 1?
I'm not betting anything.
That's
I'm
all I
betting
need to
man.
Know. That's
hey.
All I need to know.
Aren't you going to retire when the trash rake stuff?
I can only hope so.
Because it will be March 1 if that's true.
Wow. I see Brad has a plan.
I'm noticing a plan here.
Quite a strategy.
But as you are
all are aware, we would like to do an ROV inspection once it's all put together. And that will take a little bit of effort to you know, coordinate the fish way out for half a day or so, and probably Unit 18 as well. So more to come on this one.
By March 1.
Yeah, we'll have another update probably by the next FPOM.
And your love is going to be back in March too, so there's some synergy here. So March is a happy day,
maybe.
More to come.
Back to St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah. I think it's going to be more people.
So that's that beer you guys got to be green.
John Day, North Ladder, pit detection feasibility. Gordy Axel couldn't be here today. However, Darren Chase and Scott Livingston were en route this morning. I spoke with them, and they should be arriving any minute. So we'll get back to this one when they get here, and we'll skip to the overflow weir removal at the John Day South Fishway. And that was a Miro item. I have a
handout. Thank you.
Miro, would you jump up to the seat over here so that
sure.
People don't come in?
I have a few hard copies too of the same thing, but if you want to pass that around. And this is, I think, fairly simple and old issue too. This is just a reminder, because I think most of you are already aware that we did the improvements on the North Fishway, the entrance. There was a bunch of steps performed, and this proposal, which is the purpose, I don't know where you should be standing here, maybe off to the side, is to remove the unneeded weirs 156 through 158, which is three total. And this is the purpose of it is to improve adult fish passage at John Day Fishway by eliminating slow velocities and increasing flow at the base of its collection channel, which is south end of the fishway, or 90 degree bend area. And preliminary reference to this is the Hellcrafts report, which I have one hard copy. Since John Day isn't on the fiber optic, it's very difficult to download larger documents like this report. So you might have to be able, you need to refer to that yourself. And this report is slightly outdated after I read it, because it's based on hydraulic measurements were performed in 2004. That was still when we were running with 10 forks. And subsequently, the current operation involves only 4 forks, which means that, which basically 6 forks were deemed unnecessary by biological and radio telemetry evaluations, and were eliminated in 2005. So that changes the whole picture somewhat. I'm not sure to what extent. I'm not a hydraulic engineer. Anyway, the nature of the proposed action is an old issue. I'm repeating, with the symmetrical action already implemented, I have to emphasize it was very successful. I consider the North Fishway to be a model fishway, particularly the entrance. Of course, and that's what we are talking about here. So this was accomplished fairly recently in 2013. John Day South weirs, on another hand, were on the CRFM list of work to be performed, but has never happened due to the logistic and schedule difficulties during the same time as work was ongoing on the North Fishway. So this is just, I'm trying to remind everybody that we have still some minor issues, if you can go forward on this screen, please. So what the Hellcrafts recommends, basically, recommends weir 156 through 158 removal as step number 3. That's in the executive summary page 8. As a practical matter, though, I believe that it could that the removal of those weir could provide the best bang for the buck, and therefore it should be done first as step 1. step one suggested by Hellcrabs is, by the way, the wing gates removal, which I am trying to promote as well. The wing gates, which is kind of old, unused piece of equipment sitting at bay 9, and it provides a little bit of restriction, but actually, in my view, it doesn't really. It's in the collection channel. I don't believe it matters. I'm surprised that this is being proposed as step number one. It's definitely doable, and I think we should be doing that too. And I hope that this is going to happen in the next.
And I can see where changing the orifices could have a direct effect on that.
Right. So as a justification now, just to follow for this action, which is the weir removal, is that the historical radio telemetry studies have consistently identified that location as place where the migrating adult salmonids stall, turn around, fall back, and in many cases leave the fishway entirely, which really destroys our statistics, so to speak. Passage time increases because of that. They have to re-enter the fishway, and then they appear to be going. So, and I believe that, therefore, a relative biological value of the removal could significantly increase the small hydraulic benefits stipulated or predicted by the Hellcrabs. The Hellcrabs kind of talks about very minor improvement in flows, but I think its biological impacts could be very different, or results. Because, again, they located in the area when we're seeing definitely the problem has been identified, and I think we should make attempts to eliminate that problem. So the bottom line is, the weirs were judged as unnecessary, as my dentist would compare them to impacted wisdom teeth. They never come about, they don't serve any purpose, why not pull them out? So anyway, we got the permission and we got everything, because everybody agreed that they are not necessary. Their removal, obviously, just wanted to emphasize, won't have any negative impact on the fish passage. And then the last one, if you could scroll one more. And therefore, it's just, why not to remove them and see if this could result in the solution to that problem, which is being identified by the radio telemetry. We have currently ongoing radio telemetry studies by the University of Idaho. I'm sure they will be showing the same thing as in the past, which that problem is still there. So the purpose of me of talking about this is to get your support and maybe come get some funding and money. So this would be accomplished in the near future. Yes, go ahead, Bob.
Has anybody looked at the radio telemetry after the north ones were removed? Has that been looked at yet?
It is ongoing, but I haven't seen any results.
Okay, just to compare.
I'm assuming that it should be the same thing. I mean, I don't think that work at the north is going to change anything in the south.
No, I mean, it's just the idea of looking at the benefits of doing this. So this has been, these lower weirs were identified at several projects.
That was one of them, yeah.
But they removed them on the north.
Right.
We have RT from before they removed.
It was greatly successful. There was all kinds of indication. Hydraulically successful, it doesn't take long. All you have to do is look with a naked eye. Actually, the velocities are perfect. And the fish passage was also showing.
We did have improved passage times.
Yeah. And we're not talking, from what I understand, this is unofficial, but the cost to remove those three weirs should be approximately $100,000. So it's not extremely high as compared to some other project that you guys are handling.
Yeah. The only question is, can this be done in CRFM?
Yeah.
And I have no problems with getting on the S&T spreadsheet and put on there prior to it. It's up to the core to see if you guys want to put on CRFM. I need to say it's a faulty design, and therefore we'll modify the design.
Well, I know that those are the same numbers, the same elevations as the top weirs at the Dalles.
Yeah.
I mean, they're underwater, in other words. Yeah. Especially when you have the increase in head.
Your last bullet there says significantly, it won't have, why not remove them, see if this action could significantly solve, improve the John A. South Fishway's fish passage problem. Is that there a problem that's been identified?
There was, but we
It's
a terrible problem.
It's not a big problem. It's a lot of reminder, but you know, I'm trying to get everything perfect again. Really, the nose officially perfect. There's no problems whatsoever. This one is still there lingering.
Generally, John Day has, for salmon, has the longest passage.
It was a bad actor.
So, the, I mean, the North Ladder improvements look like they've helped some of that, but you also have a large number of fish that use the South Ladder. So this kind of piece is somewhat the remaining
crown.
You know, from my perspective, since I'm there every day and I see it this stuff every day, it kind of stands out for me. For you guys, I know it's apparently not a very visible.
You're saying that there isn't a, it's going to be hard to justify upward.
That's what I
sure. So, especially in tighter and tighter budgets.
Awesome.
And Tom's question, I think, is appropriate too. Is this a CRFM issue?
We should be getting the results of the currently ongoing University of Idaho studies. Again, my expectation would be, I would be surprised if it didn't show the problem which existed before and nothing was changed. So it has to experience.
Are you able to facilitate that in Europe? Try to get that information soon?
I'm waiting, yeah.
The principal investigator,
sure,
Chris Cuddell, is
right, I heard
in the hospital. So.
Just been for
whether he's the only one working on it. Yeah. I understand. Yeah. Keith are working on it. So,
yeah, probably.
Should be
there. Sure. Yeah.
Okay.
More than one guy there.
Should.
It's going to be year two
review process.
And I'll add that this is something when Mira brought this up last time.
And the second action again would be that this has just occurred to me as I started reading that Hellcat was those wing gates, which kind of was surprising to me. Personally, from a practical standpoint, I didn't think that they played that much of a role because they actually kind of flush with the walls now. Not flush, but they kind of parallel to the walls. They don't take that much space. I don't seem. The helicopter appears to, it seems to me, is exaggerating the impact of both.
That's a collection channel flow issue, I think. And
which?
And you change the orifices, you close the orifices, which also changes collection channel flow to some degree. So I would be a little careful about drawing conclusions from the old Hellcrab study until you maybe looked at that.
Yes, we have been doing the regular flow tests. And it seems to be just after with
actually,
before
the
landing flows, it's just perfect. We don't have any problems as we used to have before.
Okay. So more flow, more better. Well, from a fishery standpoint, I don't see any problem taking those out. So it kind of comes down to the core.
Yeah.
I mean, the benefit, I don't know. You know, but a negative? No, I don't see a negative. Lamprey?
The benefit, fewer fish for them to navigate,
to get around.
Yeah, this is actually already, I added this as a potential item to be covered under the scope of the minor fishway modifications for lamprey.
It could have lamprey just occurred to me as well. It could help lamprey passage.
As long as you don't want to put your pintex system down there, it's fine.
No, swim over the top of it. Yeah.
The lamprey wouldn't have to go through the traditional orifices.
Yeah, it's just
so you said that this was done in the north ladder already.
It was
what was the cost?
Well, on the north, I've been told $100,000 for that. But I think a large part of it would be difficult access, which is much easier on the south.
So is this diver cutting with, you can't leave your water there, you can't heal?
Yeah,
you
can
get the water.
Sure.
Rubble and tailwater, so it's more difficult.
Right. So I would expect the price to be lower because of easier access.
You get a few water, it's just concrete cutting.
Yeah,
easy. Rebar.
Sandy.
Point.
Okay, thank you.
So Darren Chase and Scott Livingston just walked in here just in time. One of our agenda items was the where to go.
Great.
You guys want to John Day North Ladder Pit feasibility discussion? If you guys wouldn't mind sitting up here.
The phone's over here. So.
Hey, John.
Yes.
That's both ladders that John made, not just the north.
Okay.
Yeah, it's both ladders.
Okay. I have... the presentation here, but this was an item that was requested to be on the agenda today, and I guess I'll hand it over to Scott and Darren to walk us through their presentation on feasibility for installing this equipment.
Okay, this is a presentation we put together out of the Patatus field office. Now I see that maybe there was a timer going off on these slides. There you go. This is a feasibility study we put together last fall, as you see here, and it basically is going to describe the conceptual drawings and concept of the bolt-on low-profile overflow antenna and orifice antennas proposed for the John Day ladders north and south. So, and as a little bit of background, the fisheries researchers in the Columbia Basin, you know, they recognize the need for pit tag detection at John Day, which we have none at this point. And as it says, without pit tag detection, in 2012, we successfully developed a thin body ferrite and tile antenna that people probably are aware of for the north and south, or for the county windows. Does that cause any problems, John? The auto slide thing.
I'll keep up with it. Yeah.
Okay. Fair enough. Yeah. I'll hurry. Okay. And anyway, we installed those at the Dalles North and East County window locations, Little Goose and Lower Monumental Dams, and they were very successful. And so, with that, next slide. There we go. And we looked at John Day more than once, numerous times, about how pit tag detection in the county windows and just the infrastructure around them wouldn't allow for it. It would require extensive renovation. It would not be at all cost effective to try to go in and remodel those county windows for these new ferrite style antennas. And then we looked at the overflow weir sections would be a cost effective candidate. The option would meet near the 100% detection efficiency criteria, at other PSNFC maintained adult fish ladders. So, and then we looked at vertical slots more than once, numerous times. Proposal was sent to the Federwick members. This proposal required concrete cutting to install these antennas at these locations, which is, as we know, is very cost prohibitive and jacks up the cost quite a bit for installation. And this is the conceptual drawing that we put together in Kennewick. Just basically shows the overflow notch antenna, which is, you know, just a bolt-on system. And again, you see the orifice style antenna, which is effectively the same. Doesn't require any concrete cutting or anything like that. It's made to be a bolt-on system with minimal invasiveness into the ladder and real low cost installation, we feel. Sure. Thank you. And if I'd stay right here, you know, we obviously only showed one weir, but to achieve the maximum detection efficiency of over 90%, we would need to do two weir walls. So with this, we'd just have a single, you know, single weir wall, which wouldn't provide directionality or redundancy as far as achieving that those high detection rates. And as we've talked, the antennas are basically is a flat plate design, just contoured to the shape of the top of the weir notch. And it's a thin body profile, and it's approximately 2 inches total thickness. Now, that brings up the question, we would raise that weir notch in the ladder by 2 inches, and that's a question we have. Is that 2-inch acceptable for hydraulic and fish passage reasons? And that's one of the big questions I think that we have, and I'm sure a lot of other people have also. Again, it's contoured weir notch and designed to fit the entire width of the weir notch. So, you know, you'll get 100% detection over the weir notches. So,
Can you just lower the notch 2 inches before you put it in so the net difference is zero?
And that's a good question, and that's one of the questions we were going to bring up, if that would be acceptable. If we didn't want to raise the wear notch, can we just shave it by 2 inches? So that would be another question for the group to kick around. And again, we spoke of the ease of installation. Again, we don't have to cut any concrete. And no concrete cutting, no mining. Tenon shield are prefabricated and designed with minimal site fabrication required. So basically, we build them off site, take them over, plop them on, and bolt them in. And again, the projected detection efficiencies are near 100% given the two rear wall scenario. And we feel that it's very fish friendly, as with the pass through antenna design, fish really can't be injured while jumping over the wear notch because of the copolymer plastic that we use. This should be very fish friendly, no birds, none of that stuff. So, and then again, for debris problems, obviously the debris is just going to go right over the top of it. So we don't, no impact there. So, and this is basically an exploded diagram of the notch overflow antenna. Just shows the different components. We do use the ferrite tiles for, for loading effects and interference from the rebar and the ladders. We do have a shield, that fits right over the top of the wear notch, and then we also have the lamprey ramps. That was kind of our thing we threw in there. We did, we threw it out there, and whether they're necessary or not, we put them in there. So that's really not for us to decide, but it is part of the design. So. And this is basically a mock-up we did of a wear notch. It's actual dimensions. Of an actual weir, and I think we took this, is this standard, Darren? The 6 foot weir notch, where did we come up with that? Was that John Day? It doesn't
John
matter.
Day.
Yeah, anyway, with that said, this is the NOAA fisheries over in Pasco. NOAA fisheries over in Pasco, we mocked all this up, and we basically, you'll see in the future slides, we basically mocked this up, we put rebar in it, we tried to simulate the weir conditions as much as possible. For our testing purposes. So you can see we got grounds, and again, we've tried to simulate a weir wall the best we could to make sure that we, our design was what we expected. So, which is done right there. And this is just a quick video of how we, it kind of generalizes the ease of installation. It's just the shield and the sides of the shield are contoured to match the wear notch, and it's just a simple slip-on, bolt-on design. Watch your fingers there. And then we would just anchor, the shield to the concrete in the wear notch itself. So. And then again, here's the antenna being placed over the top of that.
And it's a single antenna?
It is.
That is, yeah.
Yep. Single antenna. And the white lines and the red line actually have significance. The white lines basically outlines where the antenna windings are. And that kind of comes important when you start looking at how the field is generated within that antenna. The red line shows an approximate location of where the dead zone is in the antenna, which is very small. And so we're going to get detections on both sides of the antenna. We're going to have two opportunities to get detections of these fish when they swim up the bottom white line, and then as they crest over, we're going to get them again. And so we feel that with that scenario, it's going to be pretty hard to miss anything. So it's very effective and it works really well. And this is just a simple test for our own well-being. We tried to simulate, 12 inches of water over the wear notch, for more of our design, to make sure that our design was, our read ranges and power levels were where they wanted to be, and noise. We wanted to try to do, simulate turbulence and, do the best we can, but the limitations were the pumps and the, the velocity or the volume of water we could push over the antenna, but we did the best we could, and it was very favorable, very happy with it. And moving down to the orifice design, effectively it's the same type of concept. You've got the exploded diagram, you've got the shield, you've got the antenna housing with the windings itself, and then the front or cap. And again, we put in lamprey ramps, just for that, for the to help the lamprey.
How thick are those orifices?
Excuse me?
How thick is the material on that, about an inch or so?
Which, the overall start to finish is 2 1/8. That includes the shield, the plastic, and that's another reason for the ramps was to get that little lip.
Yeah, cover that lip. And
so is the orifice then being constricted?
No.
No.
We're actually on the outer flanges.
Outer wall. Okay.
So yeah. No, it's all it's basically a box.
Because the orifice is elevated off the floor, right?
That's
no, not a John Day. They're not.
The floor. So would you not get a lip on the bottom and restrict it by?
Then there'd be a two. Yeah, there would be a 2-inch
thickness of the material.
One side of the forms.
But as far as the inner sides, we went on the outside part of the field to try to restrict that down as much
right
as
and
possible.
That and that was one of the main things we looked at is, you know, obviously we don't want to restrict flow. I mean, we want to be less invasive as possible, just put this thing in, no hydraulic disruptions and high detection efficiency. So that was really at the top of our mind when we designed this. So
perfect. Any
be real nice to get them thinner.
And then yeah, well, they're getting thinner all the time.
Well, yeah, that's gonna be my main concern, you know, with both of the designs.
Okay.
Is the effect on the hydraulics.
Right.
So we'll need to somehow look at that in context of the ladder, not in context of just the gear.
Sure. Right. The ladder.
Because that all works together.
All works together, correct. Yeah.
Make sure. Especially when you put two in a row, there could be some synergy there between, you know, hydraulic synergy that we have to look at. So
yeah.
That's why, you know, I want to get them on the agenda and I want to get the Corps thinking about it and engineers taking a look at this and at least get a knee-jerk reaction of what the hydraulic footprint or effect might be on the ladder. Because as everybody knows, this ladder was, or these ladders, especially the south ladder, was, you know, a real problem in the past. We spent a lot of time, a lot of money trying to get that ladder, both ladders, to bass fish as good as other systems do. So they were the problem ladders in the system, and so we're a little sensitive about changing things.
I understand,
so that's
yeah.
Where I don't want to invite the problem to come back again now that we finally
sure.
Fixed it.
Right.
You know, the nice thing about having that thin profile also would be that if you did have to do any mining in the floor, it's a very minimal mine.
Yeah.
The concrete, you know, not knowing exactly, those floors are generally 8 inches to a foot thick.
That's where the problem usually comes
yeah.
in. I think that's where Corby
yes.
works.
And generally your rebar is down around 8 inches below, so we're getting to the point where we're not even getting into rebar. We're not, you know, it's just a real minimal cut.
It's been a sensitivity in the past, though, where weir itself would not, wouldn't be, I wouldn't think, if you cut into the weir a couple of inches, Corby, correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm not thinking that that would be a real serious structural problem, but cutting into the floor of the ladder could be.
Yeah.
And it always is, yeah. We always run into
yeah,
that
may not be a hydraulic issue, though, especially with the ramps.
What about cutting in the roof of the rear? What about cutting in the roof of the lower one? So
and
then
making a ramp, basically ramp it up.
Yeah.
That may be a way out of it, or,
yeah.
You know, I just don't know. You know, if it's just this area, maybe you can cut a little bit all the way around. You know,
oh, I see.
Make it slightly larger. It's just the volume of flow issue, or if it's actually how that flow. And it is, to some degree, how that flow interacts with the rest of the ladder. I mean, we've spent a lot of time in models working on this to get these ladders to work, you know, with flows, doing what we want them to do with fish, to get fish moving through these areas. So
I think the bigger issue is going to be is the overflow meters. If you drop those to 2 inches, then you keep your head constant and that kind of stuff. And then it's just your jet, you can change your jet through the orifice a little
right,
bit.
Right, right.
And that someone can take a
little bit of constriction there. Yeah. You have to see what that did to it. But it could pop up the head a little bit on the overflow. And
that's why I think you definitely want to weir down the top overflow weir. I think you want to take the 2 inches off that.
So I think the key here, I mean, the cost is going to be an issue. So how much concern is there about the hydraulics that would drive this into some level of modeling, you know, to look at, do we need to do that, or are we not that concerned? If you're not that concerned, then the cost that you guys have already floated somewhat on this would be more accurate than if there were a need for modeling.
And are you just proposing to do one weir or two?
No, two. Yeah.
Is there, given the shape of that antenna, have just one there with a dead spot, is there Have you looked at and is it feasible to do two antennas in one weir for your redundancy? They'd be, you know, extremely close together, but is that something that could be done, just two smaller antennas?
Go ahead, Darren. I'll let you speak on that. There's a problem.
Yeah, there's just not enough room there to run the two side by side. You're getting two detections with one. Now, the reason for doing two consecutive weirs is directionality and just the sole fact that they don't all use, you know, we're trying to give ourselves the best chance to get up the 100% passage.
Yeah. Well, it's a good question. It's a fair question.
Do you need to do consecutive, or could you like do a skip weir?
I was thinking the same thing.
Then you get away from that synergy effect of having two on top of each other, if there was a problem with that.
We don't see a problem skipping a weir. I mean, you know, you still got your redundancy either way.
So. Plenty of weirs.
Construction wouldn't change. So.
Yeah, it's
I was hoping that Steve would stick around for this.
You want to talk to
him? Did you guys look at the feasibility of a pass-through antenna and overflow if you have enough height there?
The pass-through, the biggest, there's a lot more constraints to the pass-through with debris and now we're constricting not only this way, we're this way. So you're actually starting to constrict three sides versus one side. Then you've got to worry about passage on all three sides. The antenna itself just becomes a little bit of a bigger project. When we got down to just the overflow and realized we could do something to that thin, and it's, you know, kind of the thought there was it's the minimal impact.
As being on hydraulics, I don't know if it's minimal in terms of hydraulics because it changes the height of that weir and the amount of water going over the weir, whereas the pass through, I could see maybe not changing the height of the water going over the weir. It might constrict a little bit on one side or the other.
But yeah, then you've got the problem with debris, and you've got, because what we couldn't get was what's the right answer as far as how high do you go.
Well, like if you could do it like 3 feet above the water surface, I don't think you have to worry about debris in that case.
Another concern there was just supporting structure.
Yeah,
you know, you get this big antenna, you know, up so high.
You have cross brace a little bit.
Right, that was another factor.
Now you have more stuff.
But I mean, you still could get around it, right? I mean, that's
we're not
my
saying
question
it's,
is,
yeah, it's yeah, not yeah. undoable by any stretch.
No.
But I think looking at the top of that weir, it was 2 inches or even half of that.
Another question.
Shaving that down. Yeah. It's just the question if the court could do that without going into the 90%.
Well, and that's why we're here. You know, I think really
part of the problem too is that the antenna, if we get to a certain size, then we're looking at different technologies as far as readers. The 2020 we can do a fairly good size antenna. We haven't really pushed the. We don't know what the boundaries are. We know we can't go past a certain footage.
Like 6 foot by 4 foot.
See, that's your
so kids. 6 foot wide, those meters are that wide. That was,
they're 6 foot, so, and we were thinking you might want to give yourself more than that. We were looking at a 6x6 just to get, but the problem is we got some height constraints at some of the places where there's walkways and
stuff.
Yeah. We were talking about, we were thinking like 3 feet above the water surface is probably our minimum comfort level.
So, 3x5. Because that is down a little bit. Because the concrete is actually, I think, 18.
And that would just be if the hydraulics are too much of an issue or we can't shave.
Yeah, I think we really need to have the hydraulic. And I don't know, Brad, what you guys are. I got some feedback from Mike yesterday, so I know kind of where Cora is at. And I'm not making a hard sell here, but I just would like to get some feedback from the core on some, at least initial thoughts of the hydraulics, what people are thinking. Is this a big deal, not a big deal? What about cutting an inch? We look at hydraulics first to see what the impact is. If there's no impact, it's good. If there's a minimal impact, maybe an inch cut, which might be pretty easy to do, is all we would need to do on that. And that could be minimal in terms of cost and in terms of design, you know, not having to go through these long design processes. Expensive. Or do we need to... Are you guys so concerned that this is going to have to go through a big 30, 60, 90?
Well, I would want a hydraulic person to look at it first and make that call.
Yeah. So, could you guys do that?
Yeah, we can do that.
Okay. That would be great.
And we would like to make a comment that given the Corps' response and the hydraulic response to this thing, you know, given what Trevor said, we can always go back and revisit other designs.
Yeah.
This is just one.
I don't like the over. I mean, we talked about that yesterday, and that's okay. And then we can start talking about that. Pass-through design, I don't really like that. I'd rather not have that in there just because of the jumping issues we've had in the past. I don't know, Mira, if we're seeing jumping in that ladder at all anymore like we used to. I mean, it was popular originally.
We had really awesome.
Well, that's a different section
I don't want to encourage anyone to have that. I think it's a fish issue as well as a hydraulic issue with that dam, so we've got to be a little careful. So I mean, it is an issue to be concerned about. I'd rather make this as benign as possible from a hydraulic standpoint.
And like I said, you know, that's given whatever response, we're ready to get back in there and go, well, okay, what can we do?
You know, and backing up to not really pushing this design, all we're here to provide the information, from our testing and what we've done with this overflow notch design, the reading efficiency and just the way the field's formed around that weir notch performs extremely well. And so, you know, we brought that to the table. And so, again, we're open for other ideas also.
So I do have a question about that. You said there's a blind spot.
Yes.
And I assume that you've how wide it can be to lower the profile of the over.
The overall height is basically just the design of the physics. I need some separation from the wire to the water, and I need some separation from the wires to the shield. The ferrite material is what's allowing me to get closer and closer. The water separation is still kind of a constant. Especially given in that situation where the water level is not always a 12 inch, I'm dealing with a lot of variables right there. Not sure how, we haven't tested what the effects would be if we start to get that down to the same
spot.
So
I guess in my head what I'm thinking is you're essentially using two spaces that have the detection capability. You have a blind spot between that. Have you looked to see if you could orient that slightly different so that you can change the depth profile at the very top?
Again, yeah, we haven't gone down that road, but it's not something that we can't do.
How that impacts.
Again, we can look at, we've been kind of actually proposed with what you're kind of along with what you're talking about is maybe doing a different profile as far as wrapping around the front back of the rear notch and trying to lower that overall profile of the antenna. But it comes right down to the fact is you have that housing, you have that shield, you have that ferrite, so all that takes, you know, X amount of this.
But we have looked into some other ideas. We just haven't really tested any.
Yeah, it hasn't really been taken to the next step. So, you know, not to say it can't be done, but it would take some further R&D.
But it just sounds like an alternative potentially.
Sure.
To get
at some of these issues we're talking about. Yeah. So first thing to find out if there are any issues at all.
Yeah.
So do you have a kind of a ballpark idea of cost for this particular design?
We're going to get to that towards the end. Yeah, we've got a cost breakdown for you. And yeah, we've done a little pros and cons. You know, the pros obviously outweigh the cons, but antenna and shield are designed to match the geometry of the rear notch. It's a saddle type design, allows shield, antenna and shield to be placed over the, on top of the overflow notch. And again, as we talked, no concrete cutting necessary. Antenna's constructed of a very highly durable, long-lasting copolymer plastic, and it's what we use in all of our new antennas now. It's almost bulletproof. It's really good stuff, so it's long-term. And very reliable. And again, we've talked about the debris issue. You know, debris just goes right over it. And it effectively, the antenna design is effectively immune to ferrous materials. So the way it's designed with the shield and ferrite material, no outside influences from the latter should come into play. We basically, it's just non-existent. You know, so that's not an issue anymore, as it's been much in the past.
You're quite a ways away from the Joule detectors that are off down the pipe. Shouldn't be any kind of
no, and those are well shielded.
A little different transceiver design there, not as much power, so yeah, shouldn't be an issue at all. And and we've already talked about the immunity. And the con would be the placement of the antenna, again, raises the weir notch by 2 inches. So that comes up again. So
that, the 2 inches on the orifice.
Yes.
Yeah.
Four.
So,
would we get a retirement out of somebody if we did that?
Just curious.
Not even
Trevor. Yeah, that's
not going to be for a while.
He's kind of young.
Try how long it's going to take to get
this. That's why.
It's the old man.
Well, this is the old
one. No, we know.
I got the new slides.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Excellent.
Plans.
This is the scrub version.
It's called attrition.
Me?
Which
11
months? Take his travel away.
Okay, and this is the revised cost estimation. Again, this is a revised cost estimation that differs from our original proposal. I guess there's been some talk with Bongo Power in cost sharing this installation. Basically, the PTAG electronics room would be a cost, and these numbers for the PTAG electronics room, basically, we just went to a prefab building manufacturer, Pacific Mobile. It would just be a matter of buying the building, coming, placing it, putting it in place wherever that would be, and then again, if it would be possible or cheaper to run fiber optic cable from the transceivers back to the original PTAG room in the JFF, which one, you know, you'd have to do a cost comparison between the two, which one would be cheaper? It is. That's exactly right. So, again, you'd have to get down to the cost comparison and do some of that. So, and then the electrical infrastructure, you know, whether that could be done by core personnel, you know, the John Day, the Dalles electricians did a great job helping us install the Dalles. And so, again, if there was project support, you know, obviously that could be whittled down maybe.
Mural works for free.
Yeah, mural works for free.
You're a little cheaper than an electrician, right?
Wiring mural. There you go. But anyway, this is our projected cost of the orifice antennas. You know, we accounted for doing two wear walls and cost each $10,000. There's your total. And again, the overflow antennas, you know, I mean, $32,000 for the two wears. And the contractor to install the antennas and do the actual installation of that, that's what we come up with there. So again, I think I should emphasize that the original cost estimate, we dropped the overall cost estimate for both ladders, I think, by about $142,000.
Yeah.
So, you know, we've really got it down. You know, so.
So this is the cost per ladder?
Yeah, this is the cost for the north ladder. And effectively, they're the same.
That bottom line there, yeah.
The next slide should be the other ladder.
Right, next
slide. Add two zeros to that cost for that bottom line.
Well, we had to put that in there because we didn't know what the, what kind of...
Three zeros. Yeah. All
right.
Three zeros.
Wherever you want to put the decimal, I don't know.
Right, costs a lot.
Yeah, I do.
Worst case scenario, have you guys got a rough estimate if you did have to do some concrete cutting, how much additional money that would be?
You know, if it was just the 2 inches on the overflow notch, and then if there was any to be done on the in, you know, I don't know, but just 2 inches, I can't think that it would be significant.
Is there any rebar in that 2 inches?
Not on the
overflow.
There's
going to
be some in there, but
not
how close.
Yeah,
it
depends on where it would be.
If it's just straight concrete, I think that's
not. Yeah, they take a water jet now in there, and they just go. It's really pretty slick. So probably not a whole lot, I wouldn't think. I don't know.
Not for
that. We got an earlier bid when we were looking at the slot for a contractor to travel to Kennewick and do both ladders, it was under $20,000.
I forgot you were on the phone. Thanks for chiming in, Don.
Yeah.
And again, we've talked about possible cost reductions. You know, I think I talked about the pit deck rooms, you know, costing the freestanding buildings, you know. If we could find space within an existing, you know, office area near the transceivers, visitor center, whatever. You know, we're just looking around the facility for, you know, trying to get away from these PTAG rooms. Just an option. electrically, excuse me?
How far can you be from the antenna? Doesn't matter.
Depends on how much fiber you want to pull. And, you know, obviously closer the better. It's the obvious. Again, when you start weighing this out, I don't know, you know, if we could run them all the way to the pit tag room on the north side, that would be fabulous. But if we do the south, or excuse me, on the south side, but the north side obviously would be cost prohibitive because you got to run it all the way around the dam. It wouldn't make any sense. So on the south side, it would probably be, you know, very minimal, or, you know. So again, that's all yet to be determined. You know, we're making assumptions. You know, we're just throwing out.
We're doing that at Lower Monumental right now. We're pulling from both county window pit tag systems into the JFF on the other side,
right.
And with the existing cable trays, it lowers the cost considerably. So I think it should be looked at if this does indeed move forward.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is, again, these be evaluated. And again, we talked about, you know, the electrical infrastructure and the estimates and all that. And again, it goes back to whether we had to hire an electrical contractor and then get designs and stuff like that. So if we could do it under the radar and, you know, and just get core support, project support for the little bit of electrical work that would be needed, then again, obviously it would be, you know, hopefully a cost savings. Again, we've talked about this, depending on the economic feasibility, installation of fiber optic cables from the ladders to the existing JFF, the pit tag room would eliminate the cost of the two buildings. So again, that would be you'd have to balance that out and figure out which is more practical or cost effective. So we've looked at a lot of different things, and, I guess at this point, I think Don will agree, and Darren, that, you know, we're looking for guidance and direction, or yay, nays, and we're just here to present what we found and what we've done, and hopefully we've done some good.
Mayor, that Hellcrafts model you were looking at that most recently, does that run? Could that be used all the way down to the ladder system? Or was that just collection channel? I'm thinking it is too. That might be an easy way to look at the ladders. They have changed, but not since 2005.
Yeah.
Not at the south side.
What area are we concerned with?
Well, wherever these weirs might be, do we have an existing model, hydraulic models that could look at this change without developing something completely new if we thought that was necessary? Because that could be the cost that would drive this up if we didn't think we could cut a couple of inches. It's up to, that's a core thing. That's a question of the Corps of Engineers.
The system will detect lambert too.
Absolutely, and again, we've basically put in ramps to try to facilitate.
So have to.
It'd be interesting because you can see what route they preferred or how long it took.
Sure.
Well, the 2020 has that capability.
If you turn it on.
That's
your salmon detection.
Yeah, and that's a question that we've brought up in the past.
It's been a long debate.
Yeah.
What part of the ladder are we talking about?
Vicinity? Okay.
I think our locations were relatively close to the counting window.
Downstream of the bridge?
Downstream of the bridge.
Downstream of the bridge?
On both sides, the same? On north and south?
I know the north side is below the counting window because there's nothing above. And on the other, we've looked at a couple different. I think one was above and one was below. And we looked generally just for the smoother transition. The ones that are just after the resting pools on the corners are really good.
But there's problems there too.
But there's problems there too.
Issues. But I guess that, again,
we haven't really selected anything. We've got a couple places that we've suggested.
And that's what it is, the suggestion. I mean, that would be up to the, you know, the powers would be to help us determine whether we can put them here or there. No, we can't do that. So that's not for us to say, but we can just make recommendations on where the best place for fishing is. So anyway, I guess combined costs for the both ladders, I mean, it is what, you know, that's the bottom line total. I, you know, don't have much left to say about that. it's significantly less than when we first proposed this, and that's what we want to emphasize. So. So with that, is that,
can you go back on slide? Oh, we have this
presentation. Yeah, I just want to summarize that these are designed as a permanent system, and this is hopefully to put to rest the notion that it's too expensive to put pit tag detectors in the John Day ladders. This isn't the final solution, but it could be the final solution if we were allowed to shave concrete and embed these antennas where we would have zero hydraulic disruption, yet still meet our goal of near 100% efficiency.
So, Brad, do you have what you need to carry this forward to some folks, and we can get back to this?
And
then again, if you guys, we're always available for any comments or help out with any tech support in any means. So feel free to give one of us a call or look at alternatives and any different things.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Do you have anything?
Let's do this, John.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. I'm excited now. Thank you.
See you, Don.
Good work. Thanks.
Work slowly, but they work. John, I've got a photo
of you killing another fish.
I can kill that one. I let that go.
Yeah, I
know.
That's okay.
Yeah, you got to start the ball going.
Yeah,
exactly. We're going to skip to V2FGE next, and George is here, and Seth Stevens, to talk about the program and where we're at. Let me get the update up on the screen here.
I think you've got handouts, right, Seth?
I have one.
Yeah, Scott?
No.
We ask you guys, we want George.
Yeah, we have George and Seth sit up here. We're good, Dan.
Okay.
All right, George, I'll let you take it here.
Seth is going to get into the details here, but basically where we are is we're following up on where we left off the last time that we met. And the last time that we had the special Federal Week meeting, we basically gave you guys an update of the evaluation, if you will, of the prototype that we installed last year. Basically asked you guys to give us concurrence to move forward with the plan that we want to speak to this morning. Basically what we're looking at is looking at main unit 15 and main unit 14, install prototype weir, follow up modification to the weir that we used the last time, make adjustments to the VBS plates. We identified some hot spots on the VBS plates the last time that we tested them and basically gave you guys a heads up of that scenario. We're also going to do some biologic testing as well as field measurements in terms of velocities. So basically we're continuing with the plan that we laid out for you folks in great detail the last time and basically asking you guys to concur and follow through with the data evaluation as we move through this fiscal year. We anticipate to have a report, I want to say sometime at the end of July, thereabouts, with a formal sometime in December.
We'll be getting data sets along the way, and we have a draft report deadline in the agreement with NOAA, Northwest Fisheries Science Center, for November 2015.
But we'll have a final report sometime in December.
As for the purposes of the agreement, we put it in as March 2016, but we're hoping to have it by January 1.
Based on
this is your final report from
from the biological testing.
This
right?
year's biological test, which has some contingencies built into it, and so we're going to be needing to look at data as they come in on that.
Correct.
Right.
Correct.
And then there's the AFib review, which is going to be in this.
Correct.
Yes.
But based on everything that we've seen over the past several iterations, we think we feel pretty comfortable. You deal with the champagne, but we think and we feel pretty confident that the direction that we're heading in is a good direction, and I think that we'll, it's viable solutions that we're looking at, basically. Beyond that, I think that full implementation will be, relatively speaking, straightforward. I think the solution will lend itself that way.
Schedule on that.
Sorry.
If all works good and we go with the Lear with the plates, what is your schedule?
We've yet to work that out.
How many years it takes to get all these things in?
But we're thinking because we're looking at plates that are easily installed. We think that we should be able to accomplish that in a season, two season. But I'm getting ahead of myself.
Okay,
we simply don't know yet, and I'm reluctant to put that out there with any sense of authority because we simply don't know.
Okay.
But I'm taking away from Seth's thunders here, so I'll let Seth speak to the details if you would.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're pretty well coordinated. Nothing's changed since we met last time and sent out the final supplement to the EDR, but essentially putting flow control plates in the A and B slots of Unit 15 and modifying the crossing plates on the upper two rows of panels on the BBS. For ABC stuff. So we got a pre-construction meeting next Monday with the contractor that's going to install the plates. And the project's going to help us out with the BBS mods. And then biological testing starts in April and goes through May. And then in June, the first week of June, we're going to bring a contractor out that's been doing the hydraulic testing and get some hydraulic data in Unit 15 ABC. And that should pretty well inform our path forward, I think.
Fingers crossed.
Is this installation the final installation?
Potentially. This is a prototype, but we're installing stainless and, you know, assuming that it's going to stay there. So.
Final for 15.
Yeah.
So if you guys recall, the last time we met, we presented data that was quite promising given the size of the plate that we put in. And we're going back in there and exchanging the plate for a stainless steel plate. But we're also moving over to the next slot, reducing the size of the plate by 25%. So we believe that those two plates, coupled with the balanced BBS plates, should get us to where we need to be.
But we won't have to take the unit down again to put in the final. This works.
Yeah, if this works, then 15's done. I think it's worth pointing out that our testing is going to be only in the A and C slots, and then we'll have to infer, the biological performance in the B slot based on hydraulic data.
I'll agree to that.
So this was short and sweet. I mean, are there any concerns, any issues?
We'll speed ahead.
So we haven't had a couple meetings about this one.
Yeah, no, we're good. Good, thank you for the update.
Tom, do we have any issues?
Tom's got all kinds of issues.
I've got all kinds of issues, but the salt here.
So far, he's been pretty good.
Oh, you mean on this?
Is this unit out on schedule already?
Yeah, we're doing it at a normal unit outage shift, which is like mid-February. Should be going down.
Wait and see.
Results, find out.
Okay. On a similar note, the B2 orifice is a project.
Before we go there, Pusher, let's look ahead a little bit. Again, no commitments at this point from you folks, but assuming that we get positive results, and we're looking at positive results in the tie-in in the fall, maybe perhaps early winter, from your perspective, basically it's a go-ahead. The reason I'm asking is so that I can start asking for additional funds and start making preparations for final construction.
Yeah.
We know, based on the experience that we're having now, that the real challenge, we believe, is going to be the coordination with the folks out of Bonneville. you have so much activity going on here, and you've got a constraint of getting this thing completed before FY18. So it's the coordination factor that's going to be problematic, we believe. Finding the resources to actually install it. Do we go with the contractor to install this and use our own folks to install? So what I'm looking for is some sense of a nod that says, yeah, as soon as data suggests that you're on the right track, full speed ahead at that point.
This is how long does it stay out of service each unit? Okay.
Well, that's part of the coordination challenge. It's conceivable that we might do this during the routine maintenance. We simply don't know at this point.
There's two really long outages coming at Mongol that may fit with
Well, yeah, and the problem is it's got to be dewatered too, so we'll have to move the bulkhead and for each one. When are those outages?
Was it September, October?
Yeah, that's probably our preliminary.
Yes, too soon.
This year and next year.
Okay. Yeah, that could be a good time to
get at least have 40 inches.
So again, the objective is to get this done before the end of FY18. But if we can get it done sooner, all the better.
Brad,
so,
you're supposed to speak now.
What?
Speak now.
Sooner?
Retirements?
Oh, yeah.
I'm waiting.
I'm kind of thinking Scott.
You are working around the table, aren't you?
Yeah.
Starting to resolve.
Yes. So this is the idea. This is whether or not if this works. We're, as far as I'm concerned, we're moving.
Okay.
All right.
We've got our solution. Otherwise, what the heck are we doing? So yeah.
How soon will we know if it works,
Tom?
It's 15 out of service all year. That's
2004.
Restricted.
What?
It's 2004.
So we'll get
okay, though, with
biological data, probably some preliminary data, you know, soon after they do the testing in April and May. The data might come up like July. We might see some preliminary data.
If we push
favorable results,
so, and I think we should. Right. I mean, we're interested in running the end of the deal on the full range.
Right.
We'll talk about that.
And so, yeah.
Hey. Well, we'll be running it. at the upper end for testing. Actually, so
you will. But then when testing ends, we could continue running at the upper end. But do we need data? Or do we
I don't.
One of the selling points that we have for accelerating the project internally is just that we want to be able to operate the unit at its full dynamic range without limitations. So that's the intent.
Right. So I'm just trying to figure out when we should be doing it.
So
not
this
December
all
of the next
ties
year.
Into the one we skipped,
yep.
Which gets back to the performance studies that are ready to be done at Bonneville. I'd like to see, I hope we can have this done before we get into those large scale studies that tell us more
what
about
FGE impact. That's what's going to come down is what FGE is.
I don't know. I've thought about that. Well, it's going to be pretty minor given Bonneville's FGE, the survival looking at Whalen's data. And the corner collector efficiency, which should be better if we get.
Don't say it.
I love it.
Don't say it.
You just cursed out. I know. All these things have to come together, and they should come together before we dive into.
I think the level of, given the number of fish, and you alluded to this, the number of fish that go through GPS relative to the entire project, and then.
And the differences in survival.
The difference in
I know.
Survival.
I hear
that would be
I'd still like to have it all together before we go.
I know that would be ideal.
Buying off on this.
That would be ideal, but if 15, if this proves to be the solution, and we go forward with, we're not going to change units next year, right? There isn't time, right?
But
we don't
know. That's the thing. This is a simple thing to do.
Okay.
So,
from a budgeting standpoint, we would have to budget for that now.
Right. That's what George is, I think, talking about.
So there's some risk associated with doing that, and not being able to execute those dollars.
There's a risk. There's a risk.
So you know, conservatively, we would probably not start making changes until the following year. We are planning a performance center test
But again, I think that any 16. Improvement that we might see is going to be negligible in those.
You might need it.
I mean, I think that was a big increase. 1 or 2 tenths of a percent, maybe. You know, I mean, I don't.
For some yearlings, maybe. You're going to need it. Stellar performer.
Balls to the wall.
Marriage is such a stellar performer for subs. Oh, yeah, but we can just average that away with bottom of the rate. Careful.
You said it, I didn't. Noah said. I'm waving the notes. Noah said.
You can.
I'm putting words in your mouth.
To be done with later.
But I think what Scott is asking is this year, we do the testing, when will we have results? And if we show that there is the improvement that we're expecting, can we operate the unit in its full range?
Well, let's look at what we're going to do. We're going to be looking at the Spring Creek releases early in the season. Those come out in a very large, quick progression. We're going to be looking at fish released through the pipes and down through the system during that period. You're going to have that data back very quickly, very quickly. And so, and plus we were talking about making decisions on further testing on river run fish based on what we saw.
We eliminated the river run.
We threw that out. That's right. Sorry.
We threw Spring Creek for...
We threw that out of Spring Creek for nothing. So really, I'm still seeing this though as a very quick turnaround.
And when is the testing?
It's during the month of April, we're going to be testing 15A, which will be the slot with the plate in it, versus 14A, which is will be unmodified, so a high-end versus a mid-range test. And then, I said the month of April, correct?
April.
Yeah, so that's month right. of May will be 15C, unmodified, at the high-end versus 14A.
For the entire month of May?
Yeah, 4 weeks.
But it's that first test that's the critical one with the plate in, A slot. So that's going to be done, and all those fish are going to be recovered in the facility. So,
yeah, you know, you're right. This is a quick turnaround. In May, we ought to have.
We ought to know.
We have an idea.
Yeah. And so it's conceivable you guys can pull the trigger on this thing.
So on May 1st, start calling Randy Absalon, maybe twice a day.
You could add on to my 2 goals of the day.
Yeah.
But I'm just thinking, if George is thinking about getting out there, getting funding, implementing this thing as soon as possible, and it's a fairly simple fix, really, and there is money in the budget this year, which we're still talking about, I don't know. It just seems to me like as soon as those units start coming down, you start... put plates in results. Because we're not going to second guess it. Well, maybe we are. But
where have you been?
So George, and if let's just say that there was money available in 15, is from, say, starting, just pick a date, June 1st, if you knew whether or not you're going to go forward, is there time by the end of the FY to get a contract in place for more units to do this coming winter?
I would back up from that just a little bit and say that if we know in the June, July time frame that this is going to be a go, then the planning processes come into play in earnest.
Sure.
And at that point, then we would start evaluating us and the acquisition process would start. And I'm somewhat reluctant to say that, you know, we would award a contract by such and such a time. We simply don't know.
Oh, I understand that, but is the cost and the, and I mean, these are pretty simple. At least maybe the project's installing these, right?
See, that to me is part of the planning process. Who does what? I mean, do we buy all the plates and then have them install them as we can, as time is made available? Or do we have a contractor come in and do them all in one swoop? I mean, there's different elements to the planning process that needs to be looked at. So I'm somewhat reluctant to just say,
hey, start that sooner the better, right. I guess is the thing. We're going to be into the season.
Right.
So, to answer your question, as far as I'm concerned, if this works, it looks like it works, then yeah.
Yeah, we're going to start coming up with a strategy for implementation.
Either that or you build a model down Mississippi to take another 3 years to evaluate Plan B.
No, we don't want to do that. Yep, yeah, that's the intent. I think that there's mutual interest.
So yeah,
we have a wall.
Will the hydraulic testing be done soon after that?
First week in June, right after violence.
And the amount of time it's going to take to get that complete is fast.
Yeah,
we're on expectation there, or are we going to have to wait for a while?
So the actual testing should take the week. We're going to test it in the agency slot of it. Sort of validate what we think is happening there.
And how long do you expect it before we know what you've found?
The critical data is the bio data. So that's what...
I know, we just talked about that. I'm talking about hydraulic.
The hydraulic data. We will use the DIP preliminary data within a month or so of the test.
Because ultimately, that is one of the things that's trying to be impacted or changed on this hydraulic profile. So we want to know what that is.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of an indirect measure. What we're really getting at is the bio data.
But you guys, so on the last year's study, you guys tested DVS plates, I think, separately from the backer plates, 50% blockage, and so there's different there. Now you guys have kind of combined those two.
Last year was pretty experimental.
Right.
So we did the flow control plate with just the standard DVS.
Right.
We took a DVS and blocked off the upper two panels to see if it was going to create problems elsewhere on the screen.
Right.
And that was kind of done.
You had a little, there was a couple of hot spot issues with the DVS thing. So what you're thinking with this is you're going to get rid of those, but that's kind of, we don't really know that for sure. So we could still have a couple of hot spots or some hot spot issues. And you may only see that with the hydraulic data getting to inner.
Yeah, that's sort of the secondary objective as well, too, I think. So now we've kind of combined the field data we have and the modeling we've done and come up with what we think is a holistic solution, I guess.
We're confident with the expected results, but we simply can't guarantee that.
Yeah.
So we'll see how that plays out. I do have a question, final question, and this was what was discussed earlier. Assuming that in early April, it's determination is made that biologically we have a sound system that's in play. Can we operate that unit at its full capacity indefinitely, or that is to say until?
Well, that's good.
That's an easy model to make.
Yeah.
Once we get the data, we can tell them yes. It's like planning for that.
I'll make an operational judgment.
All right,
get the report
in
hand to make that final
determination. I needed to ask.
Okay,
that's fine. All right. So are we good?
Thank you.
I don't
know if we're good, but you got plenty.
Tom's really happy over there.
I'm kidding, he's not getting out.
I asked Tom twice.
He's not throwing rocks.
He is, he is.
Oh. That's as hot as
I mean, he's yeah. He's not even being cranky.
Not yet.
Well, we'll fix it.
He's also be cranky.
Let's
bring that
forward.
Next item is the B2 orifices.
The B2 orifices, I think we discussed it the last time. We have an EDR that is close to being final. There's some comments that need to be addressed.
Okay.
We haven't finalized that one at this point. I acknowledge that we didn't budget for any activities. That said, however, given where we are, if the alternatives that are identified in the EDR are somewhat manageable, and I'm saying somewhat in terms of funding-wise, we'll revisit that again at the latter part of this fiscal year. We haven't met yet, though, so as the PDT, we'll get together and kind of assess where we are. I'm not quite sure how to integrate this into how we're moving forward with BTFGE. I'm not sure yet. So I guess what I'm getting at directly is let us reconvene as a PDT, assess where we currently are, and give you a more detailed assessment of our strategy thereafter. Are you okay with that, Tom?
Yeah, I'm a little in the dark on this one.
Right? Yeah.
I mean, it's been a while since we've talked much about it. You know, we've had some recommendations that we put into a memo, which is probably 2 years old at least now. So not much has happened. And I don't know where the EDR has gone with that, with those recommendations and that kind of, and what you guys are talking about. So,
truth be told, we dropped the ball on that in terms of getting it finalized.
Yeah, slid. So, okay, so you need to get back on the horse, so to speak, on that one.
Correct.
And move it forward. Maybe have an ad hoc discussion at some point.
Realistically, the PDT is not going to get together until sometime later this month.
The next figuring meeting is probably in August, so
we can have an ad hoc. Provided, of course, that's okay with Tom.
How past Brad? Wow, we're building this pop around. I didn't know I had this. Damn, this is going to be so long.
So are you good, Tom? Are you good?
Orifices that we've done nothing with, so.
Put your stamp of approval on it?
Stamp the blessing? On a document we've had nothing out of there.
Where did the tribes get this juice? That's what I want to know.
It was tribal.
It comes with those gray hairs. It had nothing to do with anything else.
That's just kids. That's nothing else.
One of the other projects that we were looking at was the corner collector.
Yeah.
The corner collector, in a nutshell, the determination has been made based on readings that we took all last year that wear and tear in terms of spalling is just part of doing business on a weekly basis.
So we threw it back at the project.
So basically we turned it over to the operations folks and said this is what's to be expected. These are recommendations in terms of how to deal with the spalling. These are some techniques that we've come up with. These are some recommendations in terms of how often to inspect. So it's basically beyond the project.
Okay. So it's on it.
So does the project have it prepared to deal with spalling and trying to repair some?
Okay. How about the joints?
Are you good with that, Brian? Are you good with that? Any comments for the project?
I did check with them before we agreed to take it over.
You did check?
I did.
So you got a countdown and a epoxy RS?
Several months ago, I think we talked about it, wasn't it? It was a while ago.
Wheelbarrow and epoxy.
Buy lots of tubes.
Yeah. What about the joints? Because there's problems with the joints, and there was some leakage down below. Has that been addressed as well?
It's the same problem. Basically, you've got movement. You've got
Movement. That. And are you guys going to deal with the movement?
No, it's cost prohibitive.
He's going to toss the patch in the cracks. All right. Interesting. You operations before easy.
Suffice it to say, we weren't pleased about that, but
no.
When we looked at the numbers, we said that it's basically you'd have to redo the whole thing. You just can't do that.
Just steel line the whole thing.
Stand steel.
Problem with that? Stay with the steel liner all the way down?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Except for the pit tank detectors. It's a very important passage route that
wanted to have. Yeah, one of the concerns that we looked at was what kind of an impact the spalling has on fish.
Survival.
Mm-hmm. Well, fish can also have the potential that if it gets too bad and you go from supercritical to subcritical, that's when you're going to have...
That's you get a jump in it.
Well, we weren't concerned about the jump. And the determination was, and I hope I'm not speaking out of school here, was that it was not a real concern given...
Not yet.
Provided, of course, that we maintain...
Okay.
We fixed the spalls.
Well, that is the point. So now it's going to be an O&M to set up a more rigorous monitoring and spalling repair program that we're going to have to deal with in FPOM and testing.
So
is that going to be an awesome change for
them? The promise of repair is there, I guess, from the project. Keeping it in very good shape. Smooth as, you know what.
Yes.
Your guys over there are thinking maybe this thing will just fall apart.
It's the only fall apart.
Half as much.
The only fall.
And then you'll have to spill twice as much. So that works out fine.
Yeah.
The only qualifier I would put out there is that operations can only operate based on the funding that they're provided. So if they provided the funding, they'll get it done. If funding is an issue.
Well, funding is an issue. It is an issue. We deal with it every month.
Yeah.
So that's why we're concerned about it. I mean, it is a very important passage route. We can't just let it fall apart because of lack of funding. Court can't do that. Unless you want to have
all kinds of problems.
No, I think that's understood, and I think that there's mutual interest to addressing that matter.
Of course, we can still, oh, wait a minute, that's a problem to the bottom.
I think the last project that I was going to brief on was
Before we leave the cornflakes, so it has been turned over to O&M.
Yes.
Okay, so we can take this off of our agenda.
Goes on to
F. We'll just move to the F on agenda now.
For planning, I guess.
Awesome. Terrier.
B2CC major rehab.
It's just in the line for the rehab study, so we haven't
put in 11 and cornflakes in the same little reoccurring
items.
Yep.
Awesome. What else you got?
TSP?
TSP, yes.
Oh.
Bonneville. Second
right.
Powerhouse.
Right. We're expecting to pick up the pace in terms of the B1, B2 lead analysis, but we won't get that. We won't get to that until sometime in the May time.
And the wind? What I heard from Davidson was we're talking probably not having that stuff together until September timeframe.
In terms of the reports?
Reports,
right.
Yeah, final reports.
Right.
So that's really what we're talking about before we see it.
Right. See, the May June timeframe is when he's going to start putting the
crank it back on.
Right.
Okay, so there's a TSP meeting next week.
I believe so.
Tuesday. Mm-hmm. So folks.
It would be a good time for folks to call in.
We'll talk about that.
Tom's welcome to call in.
Ooh, I'd love to.
Yeah, sure. I'll be there if I can.
Yeah, so that's where we are with that.
Okay.
And
what's the topic of this call?
Well, it's a TSP, regular monthly
PDT?
TSP call.
Okay.
And the issue is the beat analysis for first and second. Primarily second is really what we're
correct.
Focusing on right now. Second powerhouse beat analysis to look at the operational concerns that folks have. With that, remembering that we had a problem with the way the model was set up the first time around on that Camp Christmas, right? So now we got it right, I hope.
More bluntly, we set up the model with erroneous curves.
Right.
We corrected the curves, we reevaluated the.
It would be more blunt.
So I think that's
it for me.
Yep. Okay.
So. Another thing, so Brad, this is more for you that's related to this. So Wieland did an evaluation on B1 and B2 turbines. He gave us a PowerPoint. I think Tammy has put the updated PowerPoint on the Palm website, which has 60 slides now. That's just awesome to look through.
Yeah.
That report?
Report?
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking.
What?
Yeah, I brought it up earlier.
Was there a report? Yeah, we talked about this before you got here, Tom.
Okay.
I talked to him last week. He was a week or two away from pushing that over to his editor to make it pretty. And then giving that to us. So hopefully we'll see it very soon. That's all I can.
Okay.
And
what I thought. Isn't there certain interested parties that want to start doing some tweaking on turbine operations, and that's kind of one of the critical parts.
Sure.
Alrighty. I'm going to brief on the spillwall current status and then on the Bonneville adult fish facility. First up is spillwall. And just to kind of refresh everybody's memory, whenever we built that, we were concerned about erosion of the rock downstream as we increased velocities and necked the wall down. And we had an area out there where we removed a bunch of rock to build the wall because of a contact zone. And we had over excavation, we had a grouting program and all. So, since in the last 5 years almost, since that thing came online, it's amazing. Time flies when you're having fun. So we've been monitoring that, hydro surveys and diving and whatever, and we found that initially the rock moved some, which we expected, but as the years went by, it slowed down. So the rock seems stable now, and we don't have any concerns with the rock as far as foundation issues go for the wall or anything like that. So that was all good. We did some diving to inspect the wall, and we found some erosion holes on the wall up near the spillway itself. If you remember how we built the wall, we had to precast blocks and then cast in place chunks in between And it, these two slivers were in that same one, and if you scroll on down there, John, a little bit more right before it says current schedule. One sliver was 2.5 inches tall, 14 inches long, 7 inches deep. The other one, 4 inches long, 8 inches long, 9.5 inches deep. Real small.
Yeah.
But those are the kind of things with the velocities we have going by there. If you don't fix them, they can turn into big problems later. So we wanted to get those fixed before this got turned over to O&M. Some of the discussions we talked about with the corner collector, so we made sure that this was fixed to the best quality we could have. So we issued a contract. Now if you scroll on down there to the yellow. We issued a contract last summer, and the first week of December, contractor mobilized on site with divers and all, and he proceeded to fix those holes. When he, the first step of fixing those was to clean those out to make sure we got a good grout job in there that it actually bonded. And whenever he did that, the two holes became one. They were probably separated by about a foot, so the concrete in between wasn't that great either.
So that was what maybe what was causing it was
well,
so bad.
What was causing it was whenever they. It's an art form to place trimming concrete. And up in that first section of the wall, that was the first part built. The contractor always has a learning curve. It happened on the 6-7 wall. And what was, he was getting water pockets into the concrete, which means the cement goes away and you're left with sand and rock.
Right.
And there, apparently there was enough cement to kind of hold it together, but luckily there's some slivers came out. And what was still left there was weak concrete. So they got that out of there, they put a steel form on, they pumped in grout, and got a good fix on that. So right now, we're just wrapping up the contract, getting in some as-built drawings and dive videos, that kind of thing. We're going to close out that contract and walk away from this as far as Fitterwick CRFM goes. Turn it over to O&M, and it's their thing to maintain.
You hate to use the C word.
They only can the C word.
Crack.
Okay. The only one I had was like, I mean, because you had 11 and 12, which are ridiculously large failures and that kind of stuff. And we had different spill gates and which were operating. And we haven't had since had those kind of failures. Had you guys thought of coming back after the next big failure where we spill outside the wall extensively to check? I mean, that can be part of the reason why you're not seeing erosion is we just haven't had the failures that would cause the erosion we might see.
That could be, but I think that we've been spilling pretty close to, maybe not quite maximum all the time, within the wall. But so within the wall to the north of the wall.
Yeah, no, I'm not worried.
I think we're stable there.
I'm talking about the other side.
Right.
Other side.
Right.
That's what I'm more worried about.
Yeah.
When you start spilling out of
or 9.
If we ever get 9, 10, 11 back.
The other side, what we've noticed is there's no erosion of the concrete on the south side of the wall. There is one erosion area that we're monitoring that's at the apron where the end sill comes, the spillway comes down and the end sill goes up, and at the end of the saber, about 50 feet out from the end sill, there was already a big ditch there, for lack of better words. And we filled in some of that and we built the wall, and that has had some erosion going on. And it appears as though that's caused because we can't spill out of bays 9 and 10 or whatever off. So we're probably getting an eddy that forms in there when we spill south of there. Yeah.
And that's something I'm worried about is
right.
Get those cable
right.
And all that
cables
stuff trying to and all that stuff fixed.
And what the beauty of that being where it's at, that's covered, that's within the zone of where the dam safety folks do monitoring all the time.
Okay, that's all I was really
I should say all the time, but I mean, it's on a routine, recurring basis.
Yeah. That was most of the only thing I had, because you hand over to O&M, their ability to do ongoing monitoring may not be as great as that, but if someone is covering it through dam safety, especially after we have some of these high flow events against to double check things, then I'm happy.
Right.
Well, I'm happy, but
less crank.
Never happy. Less crank. Less crank.
Well, from what I've heard so far, we need to make sure Tom's happy.
Yeah, I didn't know.
I didn't know that either.
I didn't know it was Tom's
possible.
There's
a retirement date.
I'll go buy a lottery ticket and do it sooner than you.
Not for investment purposes.
I know. I'm
going to get a wire rope.
So. So anyway, that's kind of the gist of the spill wall. I think everything's going great. To be quite honest, only have one little area that we had to go out and repair. That's pretty freaking minor with as big a construction as that was.
No, so that's the wall. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah. So, and I'm personally happy that we caught that and had the funding to get this fixed before it became a big problem. I like small problems.
I like the, small. Like the fact that you have a reason for it being there, too.
Right.
That's going on.
Yeah. There was a ton of repairs like that made during the original construction of the cot. Yeah, and I suspect this one looked fine. Well, until we got some flow going by it, we started to get some erosion. And the fact that they were able to chunk out that middle part told me that it was going to get bigger.
Yeah, yeah.
The worst part is if it went inboard, then we're tying up into where our rock anchors are. There's cover there, but still, that's not what we want to do. Yeah. So that's spill wall. John could go to the Bonneville Dump Fish Facility. We'll go over that one. So I'll start talking. So the reminder on this one was we had a whole big laundry list of things we could do. We went out, I think, in 2012-13 in water work period. We made a shrunken down list of those things. We fixed those things. The following 13, I guess it was, summer 13, we saw a lot of problems. So we studied it again and went out and did a limited amount of upgrades during 13-14 in water work period. During the summer of 14, we had really good results. Everybody was on board with that. Gary's.
Hey.
Yeah.
This is the one you want to get Gary happy
with. Yeah, this one I don't even want to hear any more about it.
Yeah.
The only really question is, do you want to do the extensions?
I know. Those are still there.
Well, but there were a couple of things we wanted to do because if you remember at the end of the 2012 in water work period, the changes we made gave us weird flows. So we put at the last minute some plating and some baffles in. The baffle was made out of duck fir, timbers, whatever. We didn't feel they were going to last very long. So we went in with some funding this year, and we replaced that. And it was kind of interesting because initially I was at least thinking steel plates. And I remember in one of these Federated meetings a year or so ago, Steve Schlenker wanted to make the hydraulics better, and Ed Meyer was saying, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And we were in that same conundrum because we were looking at a steel plate to make it more permanent, and then it was going to have holes and stuff. And what we had out there were 4x4s with an inch thick slit. That's what we had. So we decided it was going to be easier for the project to maintain something if it was made out of wood, and we could put the 1-inch slit and get exactly the hydraulic conditions we had that worked so well last year. So we ended up getting some wood that is very weather resistant and should last underwater and at the water line for close to the 50 years. And so we took the old brackets out and we put in, we painted those.
I'm hoping that's not arsenic treated.
No, it's just some railroad ties. Railroad ties.
If you want to know what it is, it's purple heart. It's an African wood.
Oh, it's purple heart.
Really?
Yeah.
I want to cut that sucker out of there.
So we bought a big.
Are you sure that wasn't just more pieces than metal? You guys are going to have to keep an eye on me.
But in any case, they apparently used it up at McNary for the bumpers and stuff in the nav lock.
Oh, that's right.
We used white oak. The supply firm that we talked to indicated that big chunks of white oak tend to split and all because of the drying process, and I've experienced that.
They rock fast. Yeah.
So we put in the purple heart and we painted it, and we didn't paint the purple heart. We painted the steel brackets. And then there was a sensor that we had for the level sensor for the. We were getting false alarms all the time at the powerhouse. So we're putting in a new level sensor that was put in, but it wasn't working bright, right? So there's some fixes going on there. And we're walking away.
See the mantle on my fireplace now.
Yeah, well, it's all there out there underwater.
And gray.
Yeah. So.
I got the keys too.
Well, if that ends up missing, we'll know where to look.
I'm talking too much, aren't
you? Yeah, you are. You should shut up.
And yeah, where do you store the extra?
The extra ones you need.
What surprised me, being a woodworker, was the guys at the project indicated that they used that for dunnage under cranes, cribbing and all that, for under crane outriggers. I had no idea, but I thought it was something. You know, a little higher grade than that. But yeah, there's a picture of it. Purple, baby.
Damn.
This is good straight grade stuff, too.
It's all water.
If it's that big, it has to be.
Is it all purple heart or the easy pay on the
heart? No, it's purple heart. Purple heart turns brownish looking after it's been exposed to air, UV, or whatever.
That's why it's important.
The fresh cuts are the purpley ones.
Right. Yeah.
That's
why I put lots
of it.
All kinds of good stuff.
That's what my guess is.
We put it in the water. but it does supposedly, you know, like that teak and different woods.
Oh, yeah, they're very
have a very good water resistance.
That's what comes to the
So I don't think that I need to report on any either of these anymore.
Is it? Good. No, so we'll keep track of it unless something comes out.
Yeah.
Hopefully we'll get a repeat this year and what we saw last year.
So I guess we're going to close this project out too.
Yeah. Yeah, what's our process going to be for adding extension, if at all, if ever? Are we going to have?
Let's just watch it and see. I mean, if we think we still have any kind of an issue, that'd be the first thing I'd do.
Put extensions on?
Yeah.
And then the question is, would it be better for the extension on now regardless? Or are you going to admire, don't fix it, not broke?
Good thing. Think about
it. I kind of agree with Ed.
Yeah. Don't mess with it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
I don't fix it.
I wouldn't throw them away.
I think it's a
right.
I'll leave my comment out there. Don't throw them away. Just put a storm somewhere on the project.
Our operation change seemed to work pretty well. So.
Hanging from the rafters.
Yeah. In last year's operation overnight, I think, help me out, John and I, that we cranked down the valve so we had very low flow in there, but we never were able to turn them off because of that level sensor. So if we get that level sensor in there where it looks right and it doesn't keep sending alarms saying we're flooding the lab,
right,
which were erroneous,
right,
then if we do have a problem, I would think myself that the first thing to do would be to neck that flow down even more now that we have the right level sensor in there. If that doesn't work, then look at these extensions, because that would be the easier thing to do. And I think once we get the lab watered up, Steve, Sipe and Schlenker are going to go out there and do some hydraulic measurements and all and make sure that everything's right. And maybe we can play around with that zero setting on the valve then or whatever, I don't know. So that's just kind of like a minor thing, but once we get water in there again, we'll do that. I can't argue with you there, but the nice part is it's supposed to last a really long time.
Well, it will, yeah.
It's very retiring, it will give you a chunk.
Yeah.
All righty. That now concludes Spitter Rack.
We got one more.
We got one more. That was going to take a while.
Thanks, John.
Sure. It's a performance standard evaluation planning.
So, Brad, do you want to do this now while we're hungry and irritable, or do you want to have us have lunch first?
When you're just irritable.
I don't view this as much of a discussion.
No, it's not.
More of a setup of meeting. But let's talk about it.
Now. Oh, you want to go meet?
Yeah, this is not for today. I'm not ready for that.
And that's
okay,
Gary's right. You know, and so something that we've been wanting to start sooner. We needed to start sooner. Obviously, we haven't, and then in light of some of the discussion we had today with the major maintenance and the major rehab, we'll want to tie some of that in, and so really this is about just getting ready. You know, the things that I think we need to talk about are I think we need to resurrect the discussion on summer operations. You know, we've been doing this treatment thing
of whatever it is
85
75
K day gas cap night.
I'll sign gas cap
versus 95 flat for the summer. You know, given the recent flow years, even, you know, the not so high ones, I don't think we're able to meet those either operation very often,
right?
And so I just want to bring those discussions back up, and I want to bring Lori into the discussion in terms of what are our potential alternatives or options to discuss about in terms of operations.
Yeah,
under varying flow levels, and taking a look at the past few years, what flows have been. You know, I don't go back 5 years, whatever. I think there's other discussions. I think there's still. Correct me if I'm wrong, but the B1, B2 issue, as far as flows and
priorities, priorities, you mean, or what?
Well, not necessarily priorities. I don't know that those are going to change. But flows.
The operating ranges,
yeah.
Right. So hopefully by then we'll have both of them solved.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if that's really going to be binding much.
I think we just need to lay out all what I'd like to know
from the Corps of Engineers is where do you think we are?
Right, and we need to have that discussion as well. So we need to bring up the past year's data.
We need to bring it up on the table. Where we are, is there pieces of this, of the past studies that you're accepting or not accepting? So where do we start from? And then we can start working through all the things that are out there.
Did you guys talk about John Day at all? About other performance tests?
We have not.
Not today.
No.
Well, I know what I'm saying. We'll want to talk about the TIGs. We've got your John Day. I'm still trying to figure out why Walla Walla said your John Day report, but I'm not going to talk about that.
Scott Fielding.
Scott, I didn't know Scott Fielding was working for you guys now.
Well, he's since last April, since I went upstairs for that detail.
Oh,
he's been working. He's been working half time.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Oh,
here.
Yeah. So, we couldn't figure out why I was getting a.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised too. It seemed kind of with comments back to him, which seems like really odd.
But it's true. But I, you know, it's a matter. You know, the other thing, you know, I mean, from a, and one of the reasons why this has been delayed is obviously I'm in a new position. I don't have the kind of time I used to have to. This and so, you know, we are getting ready to announce two term bios. We're hoping Scott will be one of them. So, hopefully, those announcements should be out very soon, within a week or so.
Yeah, I just mostly get
somebody on to kind of be the technical lead for this. And that's a good part of the delay.
Yeah, I'm assuming that sometime we also talk about. The results of the John Day report and how they weren't.
We need to do this. We've done this annually.
Yeah.
Bring it up. One of the things that we are in the process of doing is given that we, you know, initially our plans were to, in the first year that we do a performance standard study at a dam, is we get the whole nine yards. All the route specific stuff.
Right.
So when we, since this was the second year of John Day, we did not fund all of that extra analysis. And so what we're in the process of doing is getting some additional money to Mark to do some additional analysis, route specific, some of the things I think Tom mentioned.
Yeah.
Trying to tease apart some of the different things.
What was the first study? On that, I'm trying to remember what year it was.
Spring. We canceled summer because of flows.
Yep.
12 we did spring and summer.
12 was sub-yearling that last year. So we have 2 years, 14 and 12. Do we have the route? We're going to probably want to examine route-specific information for both of those years for subs. It's not just last year.
Do we have that?
I don't know. That's my question. Do we have that for?
I don't know if we have it for spring fish.
For
12. The second year, we would have it for the first year.
My point is for subs, which didn't make.
For subs.
For yearling, yeah, I think that's
kind of. For subs, we should.
The yearling discussion is going to be more about flows and what's happening for the operations. But for subs, I think, well, we're going to be scratching our heads and trying to figure out what do we do next. So route specific there is going to be really important, I think, for both years, just to really sleuth out the issue if we can or what the solution is. Because I think, just from my perspective, I don't see us doing huge things different, but yet, from our perspective, you do need to do something different. So, what's that going to be? It's probably operational.
Spill less.
That doesn't spill 50%.
Part of the problem is multiple. Yeah, that's exactly the problem. The other thing we want to be talking about is day-night. If we're seeing a day-night difference.
Yeah, we're going to get every piece of information.
Oh, yeah. He knows this. I'm not going to even rise to that bait.
But it's true.
I just want to make sure all the data are out there.
Still less. Your turbine spiral sucks. Your JVS gets horrible guidance, so you're stuck. So the bigger question is going to be is we've got to get a TSW and find out if we're having a similar problem we have. And that's going to guide the decision. But we don't use the TSWs for summers at McNairn.
We don't.
Oh, I see. Maybe we have a similar problem at John Day. I don't know.
Yeah.
We got to get the data.
I was thinking about that too. So looking at TSW's survivals versus standard spill survivals, and different levels of flow, and all that stuff needs to be looked at.
I forgot that we don't use them. They don't use them.
I mean, those are kind of options.
In the family.
We, they, Flint Corps, right?
Army. Whatever. But getting back to Bonneville.
So you want to set a precedent to meet somebody?
Yes. I don't want to do it today because I don't. I want to get hopefully get Scott on here.
Well, meeting doesn't really help until the core. You guys need to have come up with some thoughts on where you are with acceptance of other studies.
Yeah.
We have problems with single release. We have problems with precision of the estimates.
At Bonneville. I'm sorry.
Did I jump? No, I jumped.
I was still thinking John Day.
John Day, I think, is a little different. That's where we're getting route specific information.
Yeah.
But we will look at it. We already have a lot of that for Bonneville.
Just not sure why that hasn't already been included. It's been something that's been asked for quite a few years.
What's that?
The route specific information, why it's something that's funded and after.
Yes, because it's a significant savings, and if we were to achieve the standard, then there would be no need to have all of that information.
Yeah, but there's been contention about not specific information being important in assessment. So, I mean, I don't want to push this off the track too much, but I'm just saying it seems like it's not addressing the requests and recommendations from other groups. Anyhow, that's
heartbeat. Well, we're certainly going to have to circle back at John Day and Mary and Bonneville as best we can. I think Bonneville would really have. I mean, Mark's analysis was pretty good. That's where I would work from. Because you got a lot of, we just need to get that report. Got to put some numbers on those graphs, at least. But that's a good start. So I don't see a lot of work left. Now, what I see is having Mark come in, get that report, or at least the draft of the report. You guys get your story straight on what you think you have currently at Bonneville, what you're willing to consider in terms of modifications and that. And then we sit down or not. Maybe you think you're there and you just need to test, but let's look at the data that we have and see how we feel about the operations and the effects of these things we talked about today, whether they do have an effect or not. If they don't, then they don't become issues. Let's make those determinations. But I see that as being kind of, we have everything we really need. But John Day, not quite so much. Yeah, but there's going to be some analysis here. But 2018 is coming up. Hopefully, I'll still be somewhere.
Whether he actually cares about it or not, that's another issue.
Okay. So for now, that's really all I had for that. Just kind of an announcement.
Have you guys come up with a spot where you can store all your reports other than the sneaky FPOM site?
It's not sneaky. It's out there.
No, it is sneaky, and we need to keep it sneaky. For our own benefit.
The only downside is
we've gone back so far. Yeah,
I
feel
better if I haven't.
Yeah.
We had started the discussion with the StreamNet.
Yep.
Need to pick that back up.
She's all about putting reports on there, so she'd be willing to do it.
I know.
So. Yeah, so getting a meeting date for that Bonneville one is important. If we can get that as soon as.
February. And maybe it may get pushed to, you know, again, it's getting someone on to be able to champion it.
And then turning it into a vaudeville expert before.
So late March, early. John's awfully busy.
Expert sitting right there. Putting somebody brand new on that is not.
Well, Scott's not brand new.
I know, but he's not a vaudeville.
No, he's worked on and off. Well, he worked for us, obviously, a few years ago. Been a Walla Walla for almost 2 years.
Well, let's say that I've been working on vaudeville for what, 30 years? I know Scott about that much, so.
And Scott was doing survival studies. So he's not
familiar with the idea.
Yes.
That's all you need for vaudeville, just be familiar with it.
He was at the Gov Lab for a long time doing project management there.
Okay.
There is another position, Gary. Yeah. So.
Yeah.
Your second career.
Gary, your second career. There you go.
Rehired a new one.
I'm afraid of that one. Probably come out of there with some concrete overshoes on it. Walk by the John Day Ford.
Where's Gary? He's in Bonneville.
Check out that hole on the way down.
Do a little dive inspection work.
So that's it. That's all I have. Anything else? Anybody?
20 minutes.
I think that's it.
Another successful family.
So shall we schedule a little? Yeah, do we have action items?
Yes.
Can we go over what they are?
Tackley will schedule a meeting with Fitterwig in March to discuss the land parade prioritization stuff. Efrick will have a hydraulic engineer look at the John Day overflow pit tank detection.
And it's structural. There's a question about the right. What are we mine 2 inches?
Right.
And planning will schedule a meeting to discuss the Bonneville performance standards, likely late in March.
That's it.
That's it.
That's all
I
have. Whatever ones do you have?
So I had a question though. We've had some meetings with some people from the Corps, and then they're talking about how you guys are producing a memo talking about how the Dallas has made its performance testing. And is that going to be shared with the region sometime, or?
I don't know.
Okay. If you haven't heard about it, that means I don't have to deal with it anytime soon.
I've seen it. I helped craft the early drafts. I don't know where it is right now.
I don't really want to look at it anytime soon, because it's just going to be a delightful discussion. So the longer we don't have to deal with it, the longer I'm happy.
So on a call with Division maybe a month ago,
yeah.
Langsley said that letter,
memo, letter,
whatever it is not really in existence, and like they won't see the light of day anytime soon. So stop bringing it up.
The lawsuit. Okay. Well, then don't bring it up when you have meetings with us. Then talk to your higher-ups, and they say, hey, we're putting together a memo on this. Like, okay.
Well, because you guys had brought up at the last FPOM or before that, and so Wertheimer and I were on a call with Division to talk about the bells, and we brought up, or Wertheimer specifically brought it up, and said, we keep hearing about this memo. Can we see it so that we're all kind of on the same page? And
yeah, it's fine. You guys are lost in land, so you're not going to be able to
see it. You haven't seen it either.
No. No, which is why we asked about it, and we were told we won't see it, so stop asking.
Don't worry about it. Don't worry, pretty little heads.
No. Division has it all under control.
Yeah, we got it all figured out.
What other action items did you have that I missed?
I'll go over the notes and correct all this.
Next Fitterwig.
Next Fitterwig.
I believe it's with the March.
The Dallas.
Not March. April.
It's a guy who
but 2016, yeah. Actually, 2017, January.
Okay.
April, whatever. First
year. I am.
Here. Are you discussing me on that tag?
Hold on. I can
try it. Jeremy, is it food?
Yeah.
Is it food? That's fine. I didn't this morning.
That's fine.
I just didn't hear
that's fine.
All I wanted to say.
Have you been upstairs yet?
We'll be in 11 months and 3 days.
Awesome.
Oh, come on. What are those little tubes?
No, so the better way will be in 3 days.
3 days.
So,
April 2nd. April 2nd for next board?
Yeah, this is April 2nd.
Who is our next board with?
April 2nd.
It's appropriate. April 1st would be too appropriate. So I gotta ask you, is this like Madonna meets grunge with the little hand warmer things there?
My wrist, shut up, my wrist is
Madonna goes grunge.
Yes. Common sick,
all of that. All modern
tape.
All retirement tape is gonna be all bad.
Thanks everyone on the phone. See you later.
Thanks for having Dana, John.